Welcome to New Friends Cinema,
where we get to know each other by sharing our favorite movies.
From childhood throwbacks to recent comforts, we walk through the stories together.
Keep in mind, this podcast contains mad spoilers, and join us at the
New Friends Cinema.
Hello and welcome back to New Friends Cinema. I'm
Dakota.
And I'm not doing that. No, that was so bad.
I loved it. I'm Courtney.
I'm Dakota, if you couldn't tell.
But kazoo version of Dakota.
Oh, guess what movie we're doing?
Guess what I bought us?
So I get this picture from Dakota of just this hella awesome colorful kazoo set and recorder set, and just like
for Sunday.
No, I said I have a few ideas for the opening.
Oh, it was so good. So we're obviously doing Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
And we will get into that in a second. But yeah, we've been already having such a good morning. We've had coffee. Our local bakery has pistachio cream filled
donuts. Oh my gosh.
Donuts.
It's, well, they're not even a bakery. It's like the corner store cafe market.
Oh my goodness.
We go in there thinking we're going to get a lame breakfast sandwich.
Nope.
They've got pistachio cream, Irish cream. Mm. I guess it's St. Patrick's Day. Must that be why?
I'm wearing green. Hell yeah.
Is that green?
That's like a brown green.
That looks gray to me.
It looks gray to you?
Yeah.
It's straight up forest green.
What? Okay, I'm gonna move past that.
Little
that's concerning.
we'll touch base later on that. But
yeah, so Courtney already had like a sugar mustache this morning.
Oh yeah, I consumed that donut rather quickly,
and I have a triple latte in front of me. So we're gonna have fun today.
It's the kazoo Jurassic Park donut triple shot energy today.
A very elite and specific type of energy.
Only the best.
Only
get to
the
this
best
tier.
For you.
Oh, for you.
Oh, and for you.
And for you, listener.
Oh, I don't like that. No.
Oh my goodness. We are having a ball already today. The sun is fucking shining. I feel like I have shed emotional layers of winter's past, and it is a lovely spring day. What did you say? How many degrees today?
My neighbor said it's supposed to get up to 19 degrees today.
19? That is warm.
That is warm.
Yeah.
I turned the heat off this morning, like fully just turned it off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We both have done a bit of a spring cleaning version this weekend. You did yours yesterday. I'm doing mine today. All the windows open.
I'm doing part two today as well, because I ripped the cover off of my bathroom fan and found a lot of stuff in there and was too short to reach it. So Prob's home today, so I'm putting him to work on that. But
yeah, I just want all of you to envision Dakota on her tippy toes.
I
trying
was
to get into this air vent in her bathroom.
So I have like a big ceramic clawfoot tub.
It's gorgeous.
I'm not flexing, but
she should.
I was standing on the rim of the tub.
You were not.
Yeah.
Dakota, that's so dangerous.
And then like, yeah. And as I was doing it, and I was like with tweezers, and this is like, I don't know how electrical it is.
Oh God.
But I that was part of why I got down. I was like, I could die right now. Like I could just accidentally and then slip and hit my head on the tub and
oh
be
my goodness.
So. But you know how you kind of get into those situations, like when you're cleaning or something, like you're
Do you
just
know
like
who you're talking to?
You're just following what is happening and you're digging more and more into
I
the
need
project.
Another tool. I need another problem solving item. Like
that happened to us
deep.
A few weeks ago too, where we fully took our dishwasher apart.
Oh right.
We didn't mean to, but
was it your dryer too?
We don't have a dryer. Our washer.
Oh, your
yeah.
washer also did something recently.
But anyway, we're like now it's completely apart and we have to kind of guess how to put it back together.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Anyway, I have no doubt that you and Prob could do that.
We're a really good team.
So,
should
we do it?
I don't even want to say anything else except unless it's about Jurassic Park.
Okay, so I know I'm probably speaking to the souls of many of our listeners, and maybe some not, and that's okay. But this movie, I don't know how else to describe the fact that it's a perfect movie, in my opinion. Hmm. It has it all. It has a cast. It has the story. It has the early days CGI and animatronics.
That is almost still holds up to this day.
It's
like,
remarkable.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh. It still held up till probably like 2018.
Yes, for sure.
And it's just kind of moved beyond at this point. But for what the year it came out, it's crazy. I remember being in school. Mm. Probably about 40% of the kids thought the dinosaurs were real.
Straight up, though.
Like, they really were like, no, they made dinosaurs for that movie, you fucking idiot.
Get with the fucking program, you 7-year-old buffoon.
Yeah.
So. Oh. And, like, we will get into the, perhaps the most recent trilogy discourse and whether or not we like it or not. But really, the OG 1993 Steven Spielberg classic Jurassic Park is hands down my favorite movie of all time. And I am peeing my pants because we get to talk about it today.
Yeah. Your eyes are literally watering. I'm very excited too.
And I'm so excited.
And I have to give myself props on there because I've already told you this.
Yes.
But I have to say it out here because I want, oh my God. I don't know if that was a mistake. No, I have to get used to it though, yes. Now that you have it. Another thing, I bought Courtney a silent fidget. It is like a banana filled with sand, and it's alarming to see.
It's a yellow penis. It's essentially what is happening.
So I just, that's new. That's new in the studio, and I'm going to have to get used to it, but I feel like it's going to really help with the sound quality.
Because I won't touch the mic.
Yeah. But no, what I was going to say was just that this is also one of my favorite movies. I think this is one of the main reasons we started the podcast was wanting to talk about this. And something I've known about Courtney from the beginning of our relationship is that it's her favorite movie, and that she quotes Hold On To Your Butts at least once a week. I hear her say it, like, not even not as a quote, like, she just says it.
It's in my lexicon for sure.
So when I was putting together the movies that were going to go in my hat, I specifically didn't put it in my hat because I wanted her to tell the story. So I'm really excited to get to do that today.
Yes, it's mad respect, my friend.
Fun.
Mad respect.
I'm a very thoughtful
you
person.
You are a very thoughtful friend. She got me this incredibly satisfying fidget that I am like wheeling and dealing around over here.
That was selfish though. That was selfish.
You're enjoying it. I know you are.
Yeah.
Okay. But yes, shall we talk very briefly, perhaps, about what this movie obviously means to us at the time of watching it and rewatching? I know for sure I was far too young.
Oh, same, yeah.
This is 93, which is, I was 5, and I'm pretty sure I saw it at like 5 or 6.
I was 1, so.
Yeah.
I was probably in the room when it was playing.
Yes.
You know, yeah. I don't remember seeing this for the first time.
Right.
Like, it just, yeah.
Especially, it just existed.
Because my older brother is your age, too. Mm-hmm. So, like, I remember, like, we would watch it as a family and stuff, and, like, him being more cognizant, like, at that time.
And you even know what then, I mean? Like, you're missing so much. Because it is, like, there's multiple layers to this movie, and we will get into that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But fundamentally, this movie, it shaped a lot of who I am. And I know that's strange to say, but there's just so much about this movie that inspired like passions as a young kid, curiosity as a young kid.
Yeah. Raise your hand if you thought you wanted to be a paleontologist.
Yeah. Oh, you?
Yeah.
And me? And everyone?
Yeah.
Oh, and the banana.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the banana.
Yeah.
And then I realized that to be a paleontologist, you have to be good at math, probably. So I just dug things on my own.
My dinosaur obsession turned into an Egypt obsession. So I wanted to be an archaeologist.
Yes. Archaeologist.
For longer of my childhood.
Excellent. Yeah. I got in trouble for digging too many holes in the backyard. We lived on like various different farmlands at one point too. So I would find cow bones.
Oh yeah.
And I would fucking flip shit. I thought I was going to be in the news.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to get a giant key from the mayor. I thought I was going, and my parents didn't have the heart to tell me. Well, eventually they were like, okay, well, let's just put it in the collection, then we'll take it to the city hall later to get them to review it. And all the while, it's just like the various different cows that had been slaughtered on the land.
Oh my
but
God.
It was so amazing to have that wonder, mm-hmm. but also be heavily like real, you know? Like there's fantasy, there's sci-fi, yeah. but this is like, this felt real.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. I am so caught up with the mental image of you as a kid digging these holes, but I'm imagining you doing it with your hands.
Oh.
Like through the legs.
like a little dog.
Yeah. Maybe that's just like a Garrick, like your D&D character is like more what I'm picturing. Yeah.
Well, I just want you to imagine my D&D character as me at 8.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
That's pretty much what's going
and, on. Yeah, I had tools, but it was all au naturel. Hands digging.
Yeah.
For sure. Besides the fact that this is almost, I'd say twice a year that I rewatch this movie.
Yeah, it depends on where I am, who I'm with. Sometimes I might go a couple years.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it might be more than 3 times in a year, right? Mm-hmm. Like, really, it's just like what it depends. If I'm on my own... yeah, I'll watch it every couple of years for sure.
Brilliant.
Like it's, yeah, it's great.
Ugh, classic, stands the test time. Okay, so let's begin with the opening universal credits peering across that globe.
Yeah.
And even from the get-go, you get the jungle noises and you are in it. You are in it. Because you don't get that like, which is like the classic intro to the movie, right? Whereas this was very,
it's like
you are in the jungle with them. And just like for real, Hans Zimmer, who does the soundtrack, is unreal. The level of emotional evocation you get from just like just listening to some of these soundtracks.
Yeah,
obviously we did one of the main tunes Justice with our kazoos earlier, but there's just so many moments where it's like, oh, you're there, you're in it. Oh. So the movie opens deep in the jungle. It's night. We see these large treetops rustling, and straight up we're thinking, is that a dinosaur? Because it's super scary. We're having like this element of unseen, and the tension in the first 2 minutes of this movie is pretty insane. And we then kind of like zoom out and we see Jurassic Park soldiers, employees, I don't know what to call them. They're all wearing like the red helmets with the jumpsuits, and they're geared up with their guns and flashlights and walkie-talkies. Yeah,
like the main guy, he's like the world's best hunter.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, and we know he's in charge.
So I feel like those employees are just like, yeah, they're employees, but they're like, they're not soldiers, but they're like really good hunters, maybe? I don't know.
Guards?
Yeah.
I'll just interchangeably use a lot of different words to describe them, but we watch this like machine emerge through these trees carrying this like intense metal cage, and it's holding something. And we see this, the guy in charge, who's obviously in charge, like you said, because he's wearing like a full-on safari gear.
Yeah, through the whole movie.
Through the whole movie.
His safari shorts.
And all the lackeys are in their jumpsuits.
Mm-hmm.
And we watch this like souped up forklift bring this cage in and like set it down next to this larger enclosure. And text on the screen shows Isla Nublar, 120 miles west of Costa Rica. And we hear like animal grunting noises. The tension is building because we know there's a dinosaur in there, and they're being really coy with like not showing it right away. We might get like a glimpse of a shadow or like an eye, or but it's hella tense. It's hella scary because they're transporting this dinosaur and putting it in the main enclosure for the park. Obviously shit goes to high hell, and they're like, the docking team brings in the cage to lock it in place, and then of course this smart little dinosaur bashes in to the cage, kind of like disrupting the docking process, and the main guy on the gate falls over and immediately gets like,
this is a velociraptor, right?
Like, oh, it is, assuming?
yeah
this is one of the ultimate
no
baddies.
Other dino would be so intelligent.
No. And they go on to talk about how smart this particular dinosaur is. She is alpha smart.
Yeah.
Totally, right? So she's reading the situation being like, I'm going to get the fuck out of here. Yeah. And she grabs this guard that falls, and they're all like tasering the shit out of her. And we get the first of many classic lines.
Shoot her!
Shoot her!
That there are a lot of classic lines. I think shoot her is the one that I say the most.
Yeah. Shoot her!
And, yeah.
And we slowly see this guy's hand get like pulled through him as he's like trying to hold on to his colleague mm-hmm. as he gets like ripped to shreds in the cage. And all of a sudden we get this really intense wave of, this is the first of many deaths that we're going to see by Dino. And this fades scenes from like this horrific scene to this like businessman floating on a raft being like tugged to shore on a river. Mm-hmm. Completely separate scene. Text flashes across the scene, says that it's Mano de Dios Amber Mine in the Dominican Republic. Sorry, I butchered that. I lost my shit over this scene because it's like, this man doesn't belong in the jungle. What are you doing here? And also, like, as a kid or six or seven, like, a lot of the shit went over my head when watching it. Because they go on to talk a little bit about how he's the lawyer. He's there to talk to Hammond, who is the guy in charge, which we'll meet later. But basically, there's this massive lawsuit because someone died on the job and they need to get their shit in order before this park opens.
The investors are freaking out.
Oh, 100%.
The investors are freaking out and they need to know that this is a solid investment before park opens, anything else, like anything further happens, right?
Right. And as a kid, I thought this lawyer was the bad guy. He didn't want the dinosaur park to open. I was like, this guy sucks. But as an adult, I'm like, dude, this lawyer is the only one who's like trying to question the,
he does,
the safety.
He does suck, but not because he's a lawyer.
Yes.
There are other reasons why he sucks.
Yeah, he's a bit of a money-hungry dink later on, but
he's fucking spineless is what he is.
Preach.
Sorry.
Continue. He's a blood-sucking lawyer. That's what Hammond calls him. But there's some serious health and safety risks with this park, obviously. It's not just a zoo. It's not just a theme park. It's some serious stuff going down that you've never dealt before. Like, they have no concept.
There's no... the rule book for this. There's no like blueprint. This is the blueprint. So really coming into it and being like, the variables, you have no fucking idea.
No. Right? And so he goes on to say how the investors are putting him in charge as the lawyer of like conducting this on-site inspection to like sign off on the park, because the park is getting ready to open. They are in those final phases of launch, before launch, and they need to bring in a couple experts to, you know, approve the sign off of the park. Mm-hmm. And so they talk a little bit about that, but primarily they're at this amber mine in Costa Rica where we get the first glimpse of the mosquitoes trapped in amber as being the huge linchpin in this whole plan working. And side note, this story. So for my either sixth or seventh birthday, I had a Jurassic themed birthday party. You know I got to dig in the garden for that. But kudos to my mom. She was such a creative woman. She would pull together these elaborate birthday parties with games and like treasure hunts. And so part of that party was like digging in the yard, finding bones. It was so cute. But my parents also got me a tiny mosquito trapped in amber for my birthday.
Oh,
and it was
funny.
In that a cute little like jewelry box. And you know I was that kid that carried that thing around like an imaginary friend. And like, I'd be the weird kid that would go up to strangers and be like, do you want to see my mosquito trapped in amber? Oh, honey, you're crying. My sensitive friend.
That's really sweet. Oh, I just love it when parents go out of their way to make magic for their children. That's just really nice. That's a really nice memory. Sorry, go on.
Are you gonna make me cry?
Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's yeah, I was definitely the oddball kid who would like bust out my rock and be like, do you want to meet my pet mosquito? And I don't know where it is now, which is sad, but that was a huge part of my life because I really did believe like in that magic, like you said. Yeah. But we flashed to the next scene. We're in Montana now, the Badlands, where we see a group of people excavating this fossilized skeleton.
The amount that we jump around in the first fucking 2 minutes of this movie is crazy.
We're bouncing around.
That's something as a kid that I couldn't.
We're here. We're there. We're in Costa Rica. We're in Montana.
Because I wasn't reading the text on the screen. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah. For sure. We get to meet some of our two main characters, Dr. Ellie Sadler and Dr. Alan Grant. And Dr. Grant is a paleontologist, and Dr. Sadler is a biological.
She's like a botanist, right?
Botanist, like a paleontologist botany specialist, and who are played by the legendary Laura Dern and Sam Neill. Mm-hmm. Great chemistry, these two. But anyways, we're at the dig site. and there's a bunch of grad students around, and we see that, like, Dr. Grant is...
There's also civilians there.
Okay, I have a point about that. I was like, is this, like, an open kind of, like, tour guide situation? Because there's this random kid later on.
Yeah, because I'm watching it now. I'm like, why the fuck are there civilians at this dig site?
So I think they're, like, grad students. Or...
But whose kid... That kid's not a grad student.
Exactly.
I have questions. Maybe, like, someone's babysitting situation fell through last minute. Yeah.
God, I gotta bring Jeremy to the fucking dig site. He's gonna be such a pain in the ass.
I
just named him Jeremy.
My little brother's named Jeremy.
Oh, really?
So,
oh, right.
I was about to say, and Jeremy fucking sucks, but no, no, I can't say that.
You can't say that.
But
so at the dig site, they're, like, implementing, like, this new computer technology. For 93, it was banging, right? So they released, like, this
that
explosion.
That 90s high-tech equipment.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, it was so... I didn't understand it as a kid. I get it now, but Dr. Grant is not into it. He's like, oh, computers, they freak me out. I just want to dig. And he's kind of that, like, classic curious paleontologist. I'm just like, I just want to get my hands in there. Whereas this technology is like, let's see what the sonar radar
taking the
does.
Art out of the craft.
Exactly. So in this scene, I want to know if you clocked it, but the civilians / grad students / just extras in general, the one woman, the blonde in the front, was giving it in terms of face acting.
No, I missed it.
So the screen reveals the raptor underground, and they're all like, wow, this, like, whoa. And she's like, her face is freaking out. No, and you and I love clocking extras. Like, your big break.
I'm going to have to keep an eye out next time.
She is into it.
That's so funny.
But anyways, we get into how... You know, Dr. Grant is a man of science, and he's very pragmatic. He's very hands-on. Ellie has this kind of curiosity and wonder about her, and we kind of get the idea that they're dating. They're together.
Do you think they're together, or, like, they...
He puts her hand on her butt. They're definitely together.
Oh.
And they're talking about kids and
but having
kids.
But they don't end up together.
Not in the end, no, because trauma can do that, right?
Yeah.
Shared trauma. So at one point, he's reading the radar data from the equipment, and he's talking about how the different bones and whatnot really reveal that how similar raptors are to birds. Mm-hmm. And all the grad students are like, ha, 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 you lunatic. And he's like, for what? For real, though? Like, this is science. We're just connecting the dots here. And out of nowhere, this kid's like, that doesn't look very scary.
This
little kiddo, first of all, A, whose kid is this? B,
so precocious.
Shut your fucking mouth.
So precocious.
Oh, yeah. I think one of the extras in the background says, that kid's a pistol. And Dr. Grant goes in hard on this kid. He fucking roasts him. And by roasts, I mean, like, lightly traumatizes.
That's trauma right there.
So Dr. Grant just comes up to him, and he's like telling him all the facts about how the raptor's gonna, like, slice and dice and eat him. And then he pulls out this, like, razor sharp fossilized claw of this raptor, and he's like, the raptor's gonna cut you here and here and here. And the kid's like,
yeah, because he actually, like, lays hands on this child.
Yeah.
Like, he, like, slices where it would be.
Oh,
like,
my
that's,
goodness.
Yeah,
straight up saying this is how the raptor would cut you up and kill you. And we also get a pretty good idea that Dr. Grant is not great with kids.
No.
He does not know.
Well, he doesn't like them, first of all.
First of all. Correct.
Which is, you know.
And we see this, like, cheeky little banter between Ellie and Alan about having kids and how kids are stinky and how he doesn't want to have them. But then, out of nowhere, we get this, like, helicopter kind of, like, come in. And the scientists are, like, freaking the fuck out because that's dust everywhere, all over their freshly excavated fossil. Helicopter, dust, sand flying everywhere. They're freaking the fuck out, and they're pissed. They're like, who the fuck is doing this? So they run into the trailer, and here's this old man dressed in all white linen, helping himself to champagne from their fridge. And they're like, who the fuck are you? And he's like, oh, hello, hello, welcome. And he pops the champagne, and they're like, hey, that we were saving that. And he's like, well, it's time to celebrate. Mm-hmm. And we get to meet now the infamous Hammond, John Hammond. And once they figure out who this guy is, they immediately are like, oh, shit, this guy is super rich, super famous. And they kind of, like, shut up a little bit. And Hammond goes into this.
Yeah, because he's not just some psycho that broke into their trailer.
Yeah, and he goes on to share this little job offer that he's asking them for. He has this private island near Costa Rica where he has a little project where he spared no expense. And he goes on about how he's opening this attraction and people are going to lose their fucking minds. And he asks them to come to the park and share just a casual testimonial about how safe the park is, the legitimacy of the park. And they are seriously into it because he said that, well, if you come, I'll fund your dig for the next 3 years.
Right, which is fucking huge.
Huge! And it kind of goes to show, I think, how underpaid these...
Underfunded, like those kinds academia. Of things are. Yeah, 100 bajillion percent. There's so many people with, like, PhDs and shit fighting for the same tiny bit of funding, right? Like, every year for... Yeah.
What's more important than digging up these magical creatures is what I want to know.
Have you ever, like, have you really heard about the Bone Wars? Like, the history of paleontology and dinosaur bone digging? Like, did you ever really get into that?
Tell me more.
I can't remember the two guys' names. It's really interesting, though. They, so, I don't have enough information. I should have studied back up on it.
No worries.
But basically, like, when dino digging, like, really got started, like, 130 years ago or whatever,
yeah, yeah.
There were these two main guys, like, from New York.
Ooh.
And they were, like, constantly fighting each other. And they would, like, sabotage each other's digs. And they were constantly trying to be, like, who has discovered more different things. So they would just, like, dig up, like, the same thing, like, 15 times and claim that it was a bunch of different kinds of dinosaurs, like, just completely making shit up.
Ugh.
Lots of sabotage and just, like, crazy, just, like, two rich, crazy people like, they destroyed each other's lives.
Oh, I can, like, only imagine the impact on the areas, too, that they were taking advantage of and destroying.
Yes. Huge. Right? Like, it's really interesting, though. I haven't ever read, like, a full book about it or anything, but I've dug pretty deep into the Wikipedia.
At one point.
But it was a few years ago. But it's definitely worth, like, anyone who's kind of interested in that kind of thing,
yeah,
to look into, like, the real history of, like, paleontology. And, like, it's literally called the Bone Wars. But it's, like, it's nuts. So how it was able to, like, come through in such a short time,
mm-hmm,
to become, like, a legitimate, like, science or whatever.
Right.
Is crazy. But it also shows, like, the short time span of it, mm-hmm, and that how, like, even since those movies have come out, how we now think that they looked completely different.
Right
So it's like so young
for,
and being so old,
for being ancient.
Yeah.
And of course it's a pissing contest between, yeah, two academic bros,
yeah,
or like a rich guys who, yeah, want to just, like, have some kind of,
like, fully dynamite and dig sites, like, dangerous, like...
Who cares about the local area and the people living there and the environment? I want them bones. Mm-hmm. Yep. I want them bone bragging rights.
Mm-hmm.
Ellie and Alan immediately are like, hell yes, we want that money, that big money. So they agree to go. And then, okay, so we flash to a new scene of a car opening or pulling up to an open restaurant in San Jose, Costa Rica, and a fancy man in a fedora and some pretty sick slacks. Like, he is suave, and he's walking into this open restaurant area where we meet no other than Newman himself. Some Seinfeld references
Newman.
Here. Newman. His real name is Wayne Knight, which is,
yeah,
doesn't clock for me. He doesn't look like a Wayne Knight.
No, his name is Newman.
His name is Newman. And he approaches this, like, shifty looking man. And so the suave man, Dodson, hands over a large leather.
Dodson! We got a Dodson here! I watched this with my brother this week. And, like, before this scene even started, like, as the next scene.
Yes.
He was going, Dodson! Dodson here! I was like, dang, dude.
It's imprinted in our, yeah, brains. How could we not? Mm-hmm. So the suave man, Dodson, who is a covert business espionage spy, I suppose.
I'm kind of on Newman's side, though, in the fact that, like, he looks so incognito that it stands out.
100%. It's like, settle, dude.
The sunglasses, the fedora. That, like, it's like, okay, buddy. Like,
settle down. You're trying too
you're
hard.
You're sticking out on this beach right now.
Yeah. And so Dodson heads him with this, like, leather bag with some serious cash inside with a promise of more money,
mm-hmm,
because suave man in the fedora, Dodson, is hiring Nendry. His name is Dennis Hendry, and Dennis works at the park.
Dennis Nendry.
Did I say Nendry?
And then you said Hendry.
It's okay. I'm right. Operating on coffee and donuts at this,
yeah,
point. But Nendry.
Can we just call him Newman for the whole movie?
We're going to call him Newman.
That's easier for everybody.
Thank
I
you.
Think. Yeah.
Bless. So Newman works at Jurassic Park, and basically they have this agreement that Newman is going to smuggle out dinosaur embryos and get some serious cash money for each embryo because it's a competitor wanting the dinosaur secrets, essentially. Mm-hmm. And Newman is out for number one. He's definitely what we would consider the villain. I have some thoughts about it.
He's a disgruntled employee.
He's a disgruntled employee who is not getting any kind of like form of respect at work. So he's taking it out on stealing some company secrets and selling it to the highest bidder.
Yeah, yeah. There, it's definitely...
So he is resentful. He is spiteful. And he feels like Hammond kind of deserves this. And they agree of like when he's going to get picked up and then the exchange of the goods and the money and the secret way of smuggling out the dinosaur embryos. Brilliant.
So cool.
Literally.
A Barbasol can.
A shaving cream can.
Yeah.
And it's like got a false bottom. Like you unlock it and you can like stick the petri tubes in that has the embryos. And then it can get past customs because it can like squirt out some actual shaving cream.
Don't say squirt.
Squirt.
Squirt. Stop it.
Squirt.
Say shoot. God. It can shoot shaving cream.
Okay, it can disperse.
Dispense.
It can basically
expel
shaving cream.
Okay, moving on. Moving
and on, totally trick anybody into thinking that this is just an average shaving cream can. We are just flabbergasted. We are in awe. So now we shift to an entirely different scene where we are in a helicopter flying towards an island over the ocean. Inside we see Dr. Grant, Dr. Sadler, the lawyer from before, and the one, the only, God sent himself, Jeff Goldblum.
Our father.
Hallowed be thy name.
You're sitting on his face right now.
I am. So, a little cute little story. So, we have our cute little jaunt from the coffee shop. We come into Dakota's, and she has the whole podcast room set up, ready to go. There is a kazoo, my banana, and a Jeff Goldblum pillow. And not just any Jeff Goldblum pillow. There is a sequenced image of open-shirted, injured Jeff Goldblum, Ian Malcolm, mm-hmm. sitting on my chair. And it took me a second. I was like, oh my God, because the banana, I have to admit, the banana distracted me. I was immediately drawn to the banana. But then I saw the Jeff Goldblum, and it was, I am honored. I am sitting on him right now. He is giving me the most excellent lumbar support.
And the fact that I've just had that pillow for like 5 years.
It's brilliant. That's why we are friends.
Yeah.
Another reason why we are friends.
And I was like, oh, this is the perfect. Also, the fact that I set that up like 2 days ago.
It's just been sitting here waiting.
I'm so excited.
I'm just going to set this up just so. And like, Jeff, you're going to look at her like this when she comes in. Yeah. It's brilliant. I feel so special.
Anyway, this character too. Jeff Goldblum is very sexy.
Break it down. Explain Jeff Goldblum.
I can't. That's part of the magic.
He's an enigma.
It's something in the way that he speaks, in his body language, like just in general. Like he's
aura.
Not a conventionally like attractive man in a way, but he just is very sexy because it's a confidence thing.
Yep.
You feel like he absolutely would take his time.
Oh, and respectfully, but also fucking dirty.
Yeah, for sure. I remember being before I had any kind
notion.
Of understanding of like what sexuality was or anything like that, being so confused by this character.
Enamored.
Because he is so sexy in this character too.
Yeah.
Kind of sleazy.
Yep.
But I like it. But like I remember being little and being like,
oh,
bad guy. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
He's a good guy, but he's a bad guy.
Kind of bad.
Well, he's all dressed in black and he's got like leather.
He's cool, right?
That like the thick, dark rimmed glasses. Mm-hmm. And he's an intelligent chaotician. He's a mathematician.
And he's a romantic too. Like he's talking about how he just like he has a lot of ex wives and he like loves. But it's not like
he loves to love.
Yeah.
And Jeff Goldblum plays these characters so well. Jeff Goldblum is playing the chaotician who is, it's a really interesting, like, philosophical mathematician understanding the ways of the earth and world and how things come to be, Ian Malcolm. And so they're chit-chatting in the helicopter, kind of bantering back and forth. We get some clear tension between Hammond and Malcolm. Hammond does not like Malcolm.
Because Malcolm's instantly questioning everything.
The ethics. Everything. Why? The impact.
Yeah.
He's one of the experts that the lawyer brought in to sign off on the park. And the two scientists, Dr. Ellie Sadler, Dr. Alan Grant, are the two scientists that Hammond brought in to sign off on the park. And so immediately there's like tension, but there's kind of like some charming, awkward chit chat. And he laughs here. And my sister and I, the that laugh is burned into different parts of my body in a way that I cannot describe. But every once in a while I'll like bust that out. And now I think I've done it a couple times if you clocked it, but Malcolm just straight up goes into flirting with Ellie and Hammond is pissy and Grant's oblivious. Like he either doesn't see it, doesn't care.
He's stressed out about this fucking helicopter ride
because it's bumpy as fuck.
Yeah.
And so the helicopter is kind of like getting to the point where it's getting to land and the pilot signals for people to put their seatbelts on. And everyone's just like click, click, click. And Alan is sitting there and he's got two of the wrong ends and they won't click. And so I'm not spoiling anything for the movie because we all know what happens in this
movie. Is it foreshadowing?
It's fucking foreshadowing. I watched a full scene breakdown of this on YouTube this morning. Okay, but like,
what time did you get up?
Well, I won't get into that.
Okay.
But so essentially,
you did a lot before we
I did a lot up. Before yeah. we came here. This one scene with the two, what we would consider female ends of the seatbelts, will not click together. This shows the fact that Hammond rushes everything. This helicopter even didn't pass fucking inspection. Like, that he's like rushing him to like figure out how to put like rushing Dr. Grant to like figure out how to put it together, and he's not really considering all of the details. And Alan is like trying to get these things to work, but then he eventually just ties it.
He's like, it's not working.
And so he immediately ties the two seatbelts together instead of clicking them. But if we consider the fact that there's two female ends that don't technically work, but somehow life finds a way and he figures out how to like put it together, which eventually is really what happens later in the movie.
Yeah. I definitely always used to think that it was just like someone else took his
same, right?
But that then someone else wouldn't be able to do it.
Exactly.
Their seatbelt. Yeah.
But it was a design flaw of the helicopter, Hammond's fault. And a little metaphor.
Well, he can't oversee everything.
But it's truly like this glimpse at this guy who's just like rushing through. Don't inspect that. Don't inspect this. Spare no expense. Let's do this. Let's do that. It just shows the careless nature of this rich guy. He doesn't
care.
Yeah,
yeah. I just feel like if you're sparing no expense, you should be able to pay a foreman who fucking checks and makes sure the seatbelts are right.
How many seatbelts we have? They're all clicking. Great. Safety. Hooray.
Like, that shouldn't be his direct job.
No. Fair enough.
But I'm not on his. I'm just saying.
Okay. YouTube film critics might come at us, but
come at me.
Come at me. But we get.
Do you bite your thumb at me?
Don't you?
Sir?
I bite both of my thumbs at you, sir. We get the landing scene. Dun 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 dun.
Oh.
Brilliant.
That was good.
You got it, like I said. And this helicopter scene like fills a part of my soul. Ty and I went to Kauai a few years ago, which is where a lot of this movie was filmed.
You went to Hawaii?
Years and years and years ago. We had a really lovely offer from Ty's family to come with them. Aww. And they paid us to come and it was really sweet.
I've never heard about that trip.
But we hiked around the Jurassic Park filming area. And
that's
it's
awesome.
Really fucking cool. It's a whole other world, obviously. The ecosystem on Hawaii is really cool.
That's cool.
And so they fasten their seatbelts somewhat and they land. Dr. Grant is struggling. But they finally like land on the helicopter pad. The Jeep, they like get into the Jeeps. They start driving through the park jungle and we start to see like the serious heavy security doors that are kind of like sprinkled throughout the park. And a lot of like high voltage signs, and electric fences. So in the Jeep, Hammond's like bickering with the lawyer about, you know, logistics and getting approval. But we see the Jeeps kind of like pull up on this ridge area and pause. We get to see Dr. Grant clocking a dinosaur for the first fucking time.
while Ellie's looking at a big leaf.
Gigantic leaf.
And she is just like, it's like she's clocking a dinosaur for the first time.
She's like, this hasn't existed in blah, blah, blah years. I mean, how did they do this? And Dr. Grant has
that passion.
She's all about that plant life. So Alan like clocks this dinosaur and he does the like the...
You can't see it, but she just acted out very shakily, pulling her sunglasses off, her mouth agape. She's like, and looks so shocked.
I wrote, Ellie's going off about this ancient leaf.
She's dialed into this leaf. She can't even see anything else. She's just like, so much information.
Dr. Grant grabs her head and like turns her in the direction. She's like, what? And they are like gobsmacked. Like gobsmacked. Obviously, because you're A, seeing a dinosaur for the first time, and B, your passions, your obsessions are walking around in front of you that you've only imagined and dreamed about. So they just get out of the car and walk over, which I'm like, okay, should we just have like a perimeter or just something? And we find out this is a Brachiosaurus, which is the long neck dinosaur. They casually just walk up to these dinosaurs who are chomping down on the tippy tops of the trees in front of them, which are huge, and then they just turn their backs, being like, what is going on? Like, you turn your back to a giant thing you just met? That's insane. And the lawyer is totally shocked. In the Jeep, Ian Malcolm is speechless, which is a first rare. Like, Ian is giggling. Hammond subtly drops the fact that they have a T-Rex in the park as well, and Dr. Grant nearly passes out because he's like, T-Rex.
He's like literally head between his knees, right? Like bent,
about to pass out. And they're moving, Dr. Grant notices that they're like moving in herds, and this is
just
really,
like I thought.
Just like, well, it's just such a like an affirming moment where he had all these theories and this understanding of inferences that he's making from these bones that don't tell a story but do tell a story, obviously. And he's like super tickled. And this one scene where you see all of these dinosaurs, I think there's like a Dilophosaurus or like a Diplodocus in the background, where there's like obvious CGI, because there's various points in time in the movie where we get to very clearly have these close-ups of these creatures and they're animatronic robots and like puppets, and then we have these bigger scenes where this CGI is absolutely epic for the time. And there's this documentary that I watched about specifically the CGI and
did
the animatronic.
Did you watch it this morning too?
No. Okay. It's a little while ago, but we see the very early stages, like the birth of CGI in many ways at this time, and how they were cutting down to the wire for some of these scenes because they were breaking ground. The CGI is literally the newest origin story.
It's Jurassic Park and Shrek, I feel like, are the two movies that like changed the game. Is that not true?
The fact that you put those two in the same category is amazing.
Is that not true?
Like, you know, in terms of like DreamWorks and their like
early
CGI cartoon, the seamless, the effortless movies. I'm just saying that they're definitely, you know, trailblazers. That's for sure. But if you haven't watched the documentary, I highly recommend, because we do get to
see. What's it called?
I have no idea.
Cool.
So, I know.
Search that up.
I thought about it. And I actually have look it up so I can put it here. We can pause and like.
No. It's not worth it. I prefer to tell people to just figure it out themselves.
But it really shows some true heroes of this movie about how they really had to make things up because Spielberg is like, I have this vision. Let's do this. Anyways, it's probably like something like behind the screen or behind the dinosaurs or something like that. highly recommend. Really good. So back to the movie. Alan asks Hammond, how the fuck did you do this? Like, how did you do this? And then we get this, I'll show you. And they drive towards the main park buildings to get the grand tour. They start with this interactive movie tour experience where Hammond talks to himself on screen. And the trio, which I refer to as the science trio, which is Ian, Alan, and Ellie.
The cartoon that they watch there, it reminds me of that old, like, Bill on Capitol Hill
cartoon
kind of vibe.
Yes, what is that one song? God, Schoolhouse, not Schoolhouse Rock. Schoolhouse Rock.
Yeah.
But they're watching this movie, it's cartoon, essentially walking people through the science of how they make
for
this
dum-dums,
yeah. For the dum-dums. And as a kid, I still didn't fully understand what was going on because I was six. What the fuck was I supposed to understand?
It's also boring because it's like school. It's
yeah.
Like, I don't fucking care.
I don't care. But the educational component of this movie, the only thing that I remember and to this day bust out every once in a while is the narrator doesn't say dinosaur. The narrator says dinosaur.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
They basically discuss how they create the dinosaurs by replicating the DNA that they find in the mosquitoes.
And filling in the holes with amphibian
yeah.
DNA, with frog DNA.
Exactly. Dino DNA. Yeah. And the little movie theater starts to rotate and we immediately have like the line of sight of the people in the theater kind of like show now a window as the I'm doing a terrible job explaining this, but essentially the movie theater
it's like
rotates
a ride.
And it yeah, and we're now seeing
literally
a lab.
They get locked into their seats, like the thing shifts yeah. down, it starts to move, and they're getting like
rotated.
Pulled through.
Yeah.
Or rotated, whatever, to see yeah, different parts of the building, like what's
inner
going
mechanisms.
On.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Dakota. Wow. So the
teamwork, it's what this podcast is
it's
all about.
All about. It makes the dream work. And they essentially are now witnessing this lab, this fertilization, the embryo, the incubation lab of where all of the dino eggs are being fertilized. The room starts to spin and they're freaking out. They're like, "What? Can we not go in there? Like, we want to go in there." And the trio like busts out yeah. of the ride and makes their way into the lab. And we follow the group as they explore the lab. They are like fascinated by the fact that these little eggs are incubating with little dinosaurs in them. Ellie finds a table where one is hatching, and a scientist played by none other than BD Wong, also known for his incredible work as a psychiatric consultant on Law and Order SVU. He plays Dr. Wu, who explains, essentially how they breed the animals in lab, all as female, so that they cannot breed in real life in the park. Hammond immediately grabs gloves because one starts to hatch, and he's like coaxing out this like little slimy raptor out of its little shell.
He wants them all to imprint on him, which is kind of a really funny concept to me of like this one old man having like a horde of different kinds of dinosaurs that have all imprinted on
Mother.
Him, and they're all yeah, yeah. He's like breastfeeding all of them.
Who's next? Oh, don't bite. But
also that Dr. Grant has to ask what kind of dinosaur this is.
Ugh, I know, that was
like
a bit
he
of like
doesn't
a,
fucking know what kind of dinosaur
right?
this is.
But I think also he's like, what the? This is a fucking raptor.
Maybe
confirm
he's
this
like,
for me.
Sure, yeah. Sure, sure, sure. Yeah.
But also we get a little glimpse into how this god complex that Hammond has about being like
dada,
the dada mm-hmm. of all of them. Quite arrogant. So Alan recognizes and clocks that this dinosaur is not just any dinosaur, that it's a velociraptor, and the mood immediately shifts because all of a sudden now it's not just like, oh my gosh, dinosaurs, it's like, oh, you have fucking killers here.
Yeah. And this is where Jeff says life finds a way, because
yeah.
this is when
yeah.
they're talking about, because he's really questioning, well, how do you know that they're not gonna
breed
and yeah. like but and he's like, well, they're all female, dummy. And he's like, yeah, but how do you no, like
you can't all the variables like we talked about.
Yeah, he's the only one thinking like, yeah, but you cannot possibly account for
no, there's no
every
guarantee.
Possibility. Yeah, and I know, like, again, it's like the whole plot of the movie, but it's like, why do they need raptors?
It's the flash. It's the look
yeah.
what we can do.
Yeah.
Look at what I can control. Again, this like godlike complex. And I don't know if you noticed this, but Hammond is always wearing white throughout
yeah.
the whole movie. And Ian's always wearing black.
Mm-hmm.
And so Alan and Ellie are obviously coded as Adam and Eve. And Ian is coded as like the questioning devil. And the mm-hmm. Grant is like coded as like godlike and white.
Hammond.
Father.
Yeah.
Hammond, yeah, sorry. And father of all. And it's the arrogance that he doesn't fully see, whereas
yeah.
Ian clocks it from the very beginning.
Yeah.
He's like, this is not okay, because you just assume that you have control over everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true, that's true. And like how, yeah, of course, this character would have to have raptors.
Of course he would.
Because he has to show that he, like, can do it all. And then, and he says later too, Ian says later, like, you were so obsessed with if you can or something like that, you never stop to think if you should.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And I'm reminded of what you just shared about the Bone Wars, about how these men got so wrapped up in being the best and having the most and didn't really consider the implications and consequences of their actions. And that's really Hammond, right?
And how much also that whole, like, I would say, I'm industry, not industry, whatever, had to bust ass to come back from that beginning too, just to being like so unlegit. Like, how much more they've had to really fight to be like, this is legitimate, because it came from this like explosion of like hoaxiness and like bullshit.
Well, there's a lot of discourse online talking that Hammond is like a snake oil salesman. He is a huckster. He goes on to talk about his flea circus and whatnot later, but,
and I love that part. It's very introspective, but also he's like a billionaire, right? You have to have done some dirty fucking shit to be a billion, to be that rich. To get that rich,
your hands aren't clean.
No, there's no way. So even though he gives good grandpa vibes, like, he's got skeletons. Well, for a moment he does, and then he's got skeletons for sure. Probably literal skeletons.
It's that once we get this idea that, they have raptors in the park, Hammond shows them the raptor enclosure. So we go back to the very same cage that we started at the beginning this movie, which feels years ago at this point, but it's the raptor cage, and the group approaches, and Hammond's explaining, hey, and trying to persuade, hey, yeah, this is where the raptors are, but let's eat lunch first. I hear the chef has this beautiful like sea bass that we're Chilean,
and they're
sea
like,
bass.
We want to see this
now.
What's going on,
and we hear this like winch pulley system of this cow being basically delivered on a silver platter, hovering over the cage and lowering in.
So the enclosure is like dug down too, right?
Yeah.
Like it's like they're, so it's, yeah, being lowered down into this enclosure. But where they're standing, it's like they're at the top basically.
Yes.
Like you can't just see in.
Exactly.
And they're talking about how there's going to be like down underneath, you can like how you do at a zoo, right?
Yeah, exactly.
How you could see.
And they really, again, we don't see the raptors very much. They very rarely show the raptors until a very certain point in this movie, because they're really building that dread. But we hear them. And when that cow is lowered in, we see the rustling of the foliage and whatnot in the enclosure. But we hear like the screaming of the cow and the actual like slashing and eating. And it's just really grotesque. And we see the faces of everybody watching this. And they're just like, oh my God, this is insane. And the raptor is going hard on that cow.
And that winch comes back up, and it's like the whole apparatus is just fucking destroyed.
It's
like,
in shreds.
It's shredded. Yeah. And also, this is the hunter guy is here, right?
Oh, yeah, Robert.
At this point, and he's kind of talking to them about how fucking smart that one raptor is, and like how she's like systematically having them test for weakness and like
on the electrical all this, fences.
Which is, and so also like he's a good guy, I think. Like,
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even though he's like a big game hunter, which is like,
boo.
In real life, not a fan. But I just feel like he's like really kind of the boots on the ground. Like he has a lot of information. He's watching everything. And he's the only one really that has that reality of like,
how dangerous.
Understanding and like really respecting and like, he is doing everything that he can do within this, like, he's still getting his paycheck.
Yeah, but he's the working
class.
But
he's, like, trying to make sure that this is, like, done safely.
Done safely. He knows what he's doing. He's the expert of the animals at this point, right? And his name is Robert Muldoon, which is, like, the best fucking name of all time. And he's the, like you said, the game warden. And this alpha that he's talking about, this alpha raptor, she's fierce. She's smart. She's in charge. She doesn't take any shit. And she's calculated. We will get to see her later on. I cannot wait. She's queen.
Just the way that we're talking about a raptor. Like, she's fierce. It's giving that, like, nails emoji.
Yeah, it's the nails emoji, but, like, covered in blood.
Yeah.
Dripping with blood. He says they're fast as cheetahs. They're pack hunters. They're incredible problem solvers, especially the alpha queen. So after seeing this cow get ridiculously shredded
then
and
destroyed.
Then they go for lunch.
And it is sea bass. And this, I think in any other situation, it would look good. This food looks disgusting.
It's not appetizing.
After this especially, it's just like this like white like meat and like.
Oh, and Ellie's face is like, gulp, I can't eat this. And we are all Ellie at this point.
But
and
I feel like in a restaurant, like, that would look good. Like, it would look, it was a beautiful, like, dish. But, like, specifically in this context, in the moment you're looking at it and you're like, that is foul.
That is foul. The prelude of watching that cow get destroyed is just not it. So,
so sorry.
Yeah.
The server is bringing out one dish at a time.
Yes. He this whole boardroom scene is weird.
He has two hands, one of them empty, and he's bringing one dish out at a time.
Can you tell which one of us has worked in food services and who hasn't?
The chef is in that kitchen screaming at this guy.
Faster, faster.
Yeah.
So plate by plate, lunch is coming out. And I just want to paint the scene. So they're in this dark ass boardroom with a single long table. They're all sitting around this like boardroom style table with the weirdest fucking projectors just around them in this dark ass room with the strangest, you know, big stock images of Jurassic Park style photos. There's just one that says Jurassic Tennis. Did you clock that? Kids in various tie-dye wares, graphs, projected merchandise.
Yeah, this is like the merchandising possibilities.
This is the pitch. So they're sitting down and Hammond is kind of checking in with each one of these experts being like, so what do you think? And they get into this really interesting ethical debate about, like you said, just because you can doesn't mean you should. Mm-hmm. And adult me has an understanding of why they're there, but kiddo me was just like, what the, this is so fucking boring.
See, and I'm little kid me is like, this is fancy.
Adult you's like, one plate at a time.
let's get this going. Serve this food hot, come on.
But this like fever dream of a boardroom lunch turns into this discussion about like, you know, how much money they're going to make.
Yeah.
The amount of money on merchandise alone, which hilarious. How much money do you think Jurassic Park actually has made over the years?
On merchandise, probably like 100 times more than they did in the box office,
exactly.
I bet.
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Oh,
it's still like, I have a Jurassic Park sticker on my car now.
Yes. Yes. I have two Jurassic Park t-shirts at home that I could not find.
Yeah. And Ian Malcolm being the only sober person at this table, because at this point even the lawyer's on board, like he's
doubtful,
like
at first,
but now it's the money and he's like, oh, the amount of money that we're gonna make from this will make up for anything else,
including death,
could happen.
Yeah,
we'll be able to pay for death,
yes,
with the amount of fucking money we're gonna make. It doesn't matter,
it doesn't matter.
And even Ellie and Grant are like, this, wow, they really did it. Like, they're just so wrapped up in the fact still at this point that, and like, I think it was really kind of sickening in the bad way, seeing them, the raptors being fed, but they also had the conversation with Magoon or whatever. What's his name?
Robert Honey? Muldoon.
Muldoon. Yep. And so they're like, well, they are taking precautions and they're like, they're starting to get wrapped up. You know, you're in a bad situation where fucking Ian Malcolm is the only person in the room being rational.
Yeah.
Where it's like, his whole thing is chaos. So he's not really like rational.
Of course. Right?
But it's like, he's the only one at this point in the movie that's like, hey guys.
Hello. And I appreciate that point so much because at the beginning, like you said, Ellie and Alan are kind of still in this like awe, like starstruck kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. And then Ian says these things about how life finds a way. Just because you could doesn't mean you should. Ellie goes on to say about how the variables alone, we have not experienced these 65 million year old creatures, including the plant life.
Mm-hmm.
And we have no idea how they're going to interact. We have no idea what the outcomes are going to be because we just have never witness or experience the variables.
I think also people really underestimate like plants' ability to evolve. Like, plants evolve way faster than humans or other creatures do. You know what I learned recently?
Tell me.
That birds don't taste spice.
Really?
Did I tell you this?
No.
Yeah. So like capsicum, like, you know, spice comes from the seeds in peppers.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
That the plants develop that as a defense mechanism to stop them from being eaten. But birds don't digest the seeds and they poop them out. So birds naturally spread the seeds.
But don't
birds
eat
don't
them.
Taste. Well, they do.
I mean, like taste them. Yeah.
But they don't taste spice because the plant doesn't want birds to not eat them.
Isn't that brilliant?
The plant wants us to not eat them.
It's the symbiotic
relationship. Isn't that crazy?
That's insane. And if you have ever seen a crow or a raven, those things are brilliant. I saw a video once of the crow literally snowboarding down a roof on like a, I don't know, like a fucking Dr. Pepper cap, because
that's hilarious.
He's just, and then picked it up and did it again. It was just for fun.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Ugh. Okay, anyways, back to, but I just had to, like,
we had to talk about
isn't
it.
Isn't that nuts? Insane. Yeah. But like, you raised a great point. Ellie was kind of saying the same thing. And then Grant, Dr. Grant goes, yeah, actually, you know, we've never coexisted with these variables, so we have no idea.
They're starting to kind of come back down to earth a little bit.
Yeah,
yeah,
they're starting to, and thank God Malcolm's there, and we have no idea what to expect, because basically we're coexisting for the first time, commingling. So a staff member comes in to inform Hammond that his grandchildren have arrived, and they kind of leave that boardroom and come down into like that main
grandpa
kind of, and they fucking tackle that man to the ground.
You know what, I think why I have a soft spot for him is, have you seen a picture of my grandpa? No, I don't have one in this room right now, but they look like
pretty similar.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
So you got grandpa bias.
Yeah. Big time. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of funny on this scene where the kids are like tackle the grandpa, and Dr. Grant is just like more scared of the kids than they are the dinosaurs.
It actually, the grandpa bias has been really hard for me to unpack through this movie, because as I'm watching it, I'm like, oh no, he's not a good guy.
No.
Fuck.
His sweet, like, soft face and like joyful laughter, and he's like, I don't care how many people die. So cue the iconic Jurassic Park Jeeps. Spared no expense.
Those aren't Jeeps. Those are Explorers.
But. Oh, yes. And they're kind of like locked in magnetically to a track. So we have the gas Jeeps that can go willy-nilly in the park.
And then the Ford Explorers that are on the tracks.
Like, cannot move.
Holy fuck. I love those. The color, like the branding.
Brilliant. It's got like the classic image of the skeletal T-Rex on it. And we have like the yellow, the greens, the reds. Yeah. It's so great. And there's a bit of a musical chair scene that kind of unfolds as Dr. Grant.
The little boy is really into dinosaurs, and he's a big fan of Dr. Grant.
Yes, and he's like, I read your book, and he's kind of like following around, and Dr. Grant's like, oh, kid, get the fuck away from me. And then he straight up asks him, he's like, well, what car are you gonna be in? And the kid's like, well, whatever one you are. And he's like, ugh. So he manages to like fandangle the kid and get him into a Jeep with his sister and the lawyer. Mm-hmm. So the kid's name is Tim. I refer to him as Timmy throughout the entire thing, because Lex in some parts of the movie, they're like, Timmy.
And Lex looks anytime I see a little blonde girl with Avery? A little cute nose, I think of my little sister.
I think of Avery too. Like, I saw that, I was like, oh, that looks like Avery.
Yeah. So I'm like, I have my little heart about protecting those children. I'm just like,
oh. So I would say they're like 13 and 9, right? Like, Lex is the older sister, and Timmy's
maybe
a little bit younger.
12, I would think, but maybe 12, 13, whatever.
Yeah.
She has to be old enough to, like, know a lot about computers.
Oh, yes, because she's a hacker, which will definitely come in handy later. So Timmy gets locked into a car with Lex, his older sister, and the lawyer, and the science trio is in the second car. When we cut to Hammond in the control room with all the other computer people, they're getting the cars ready to launch.
All the other computer people? That's all you're going to say?
No, I'm going to introduce them.
Okay.
Samuel L. Jackson is the lead computer engineer of the command room.
Constantly chain smoking,
cigarette hanging out of his lip.
He's never, barely, I think he inhales twice during the movie, but it's like, how it's like flopping out of his
and smoke mouth. Billowing from him. Yeah. So his character's name is Ray Arnold, and we see that there's like a few other people kind of like busying around, but this is just a soft launch, right? So there's not like the full crowd of employees there. And he says the classic line, hold on to your butts. And like Dakota said, that is just something I say on a daily basis.
Butts.
Hold on to your butts.
He says that twice in this movie.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's
obviously his thing.
Yeah. It's his catchphrase. It's my catchphrase.
Yeah, it is. But this is also too, when you see like Dennis's desk.
Yes.
Area, very messy.
Sloppy baby.
Sloppy.
And I'll go in to talk a little bit that in a second. Mm-hmm. So we have the two Jeeps. And the ride, or I guess the grand tour, starts. And they are not controlling the Jeeps. The command room is controlling the Jeeps. It's all electrical.
And they're all on camera and stuff. They've got audio and visual. Yeah. Like, it's all So yeah, soft launch, exactly. It's like, this is what it will look like.
Exactly. And so the first animal enclosure that we get to is the Dilophosaurus, which is the poisonous one that fans out its little thing. Funny enough, not here, but will appear later. But it's a bit of a bummer, right? Like, there's no dinosaur to be seen. And so they're
considering these like paddocks and enclosures are huge, like, of course, you're not going to see them
unless you're literally, you know, being chased by it.
Yeah.
Back in the command room, we overhear Ray mention that the headlights aren't working properly. The Jeeps are not functioning in the way. So it's like 151 out of the list. Like, there's the list is like racking up of all of the glitches that's going wrong with the launch.
And it's like code stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's not going great. And he mentions that all of the problems, of running like a zoo and a theme park at the same time, it's a lot of factors to consider, and the computer system's not functioning at its best. So Hammond goes over to Dennis, aka Newman, and we know as the audience that he's planning to screw them over, but we get to witness a bit of an exchange between him and Hammond, where Hammond's a fucking awful boss. Like, he was insanely rude to this guy. Like, obviously there's a history and a dynamic between the two of them, but clearly Newman has been saying, I'm not getting recognized and paid for my work. I believe I deserve a little
the
bit more.
The whole infrastructure online, like all of the automation, everything
to do with
he has built
from scratch
the whole thing, and for that to be one person's job, that's crazy. And then for Hammond to be like, don't fucking talk to me about your financial problems, I don't care, when you're the one cutting the checks,
right?
It's like, yeah, absolutely. But there's also this thing of like, what? Why are you even like, I don't know. There's like things about Dennis too, where I'm like, how has Hammond ever just given this whole job to him?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a both.
Oh, they're not. Neither are innocent, and both of them are guilty.
It's a bad pairing.
Yeah. And they're bickering in the back and forth. And all of a sudden, Broody Muldoon says, quiet. They're approaching the T-Rex enclosure in the park. And so we shift gears and we're back in the Jeeps with the crews, and we see them, the Jeeps roll up to this tall, massive fencing with a massive landscape behind them with like rolling hills and whatnot. And we really get to see that, oh, this is the big one. And we overhear Malcolm say, God creates dinosaurs. God destroys dinosaurs. God creates man. Man destroys God. Man creates dinosaurs. And then Ellie says, dinosaurs eat man. Woman inherits the earth.
Yeah,
which I'm
so
like,
good.
Love it, Queen.
And Ian's
amazing.
Like, oh yeah,
he's into her. Yeah. And the men stare at her, being like, oh, fair enough. And so obviously there's no T-Rex. A bit of a bummer again. So we see this sweet baby angel of a goat get loaded from below. Chained to a post.
Something I thought about too in this scene though was like, was that goat just like waiting down there?
Oh,
is
yeah.
there a whole underground system where they could bring
network.
In the goat? Like, how long has that goat been down there?
His entire life, I bet. That poor little goat's only there. You see Lex go, well, what's gonna happen to the goat? Is he gonna eat the goat? And Timmy's like, excellent. Yeah.
Lex is a vegetarian.
Yeah. And we hear Dr. Grant being like, the T-Rex doesn't want to be fed. The T-Rex wants to hunt, which is another classic line. But even with the goat, no T-Rex. And it's getting kind of like snooze, yawn, nothing's happening. They're getting a little bored, and it's hot and stuffy in those Jeeps because they can't really like roll down the windows because it's all being operated from the command room.
Right.
Malcolm goes on to explain like the chaos theory with Ellie, a little flirty, a little touchy, a little drippy on the hands, predicting where the water will go moment. Very Jeff Goldblum. And
hand stuff.
Yeah, hand stuff. Sorry, that hand stuff. Alan is not really paying attention, doesn't care, or like he's like, whatever. But he clocks like a Jeep out in a paddock, kind of in the area, and he gets out of the car. And all of the alarms are going off in the command room, like, ding, 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 ding. He's like, we should have put locking mechanisms on the doors. I should have told you. And so everybody, lawyer, Ellie, Lexi, Timmy, follow Dr. Grant out of the Jeeps into the brush where they find a huge triceratops.
This is the most real looking thing of the whole movie.
And that is one of the most beautiful animatronic, like the creativity of like the skin and the face.
It's very tactile.
The breathing.
The way that it's breathing. Yeah.
Oh, so cool. And it's sick and it's tranked up. So it's kind of like dozy doopy on the ground. Ellie and Alan are
fucking geeking out hard. They Ellie starts to weep. She's just like in awe of this beautiful creature.
And then she gets right to work trying to figure out why it's sick.
Her hands are in that fucking dinosaur's mouth so quick. She's just like, what is this? And she's like trying to figure out why it's sick. And like you said, the wheels are turning. She's like, is that Wendy's West Indian lilac? And she goes into that and she's trying to figure out what could potentially be a factor in why this dinosaur is sick, which we find out, this is a little tidbit from the book that didn't make it into the movie, by which I haven't read the book, but it's definitely on my to-read list for sure. But apparently this is a little nod to a storyline in the book where all of the dinosaurs are sick. And later on in the movie, one of the brontosauruses, or brachiosauruses, sneezes on Lex. The dinosaurs are sick because they rushed the genetic code.
Yeah.
They're so sick because they're not healthy. They're not, they're breaking down, which is such a sad element now
the movie. Every time the season changes, I like break out and my skin gets really dry.
Yeah.
Imagine like waking up 65 million years after your
right.
Like how much just the climate alone would probably affect you.
Exactly. Allergies, their immune systems are not able to function properly.
Complexion.
So, all of it. And so Ellie is now like in a deep dive of like, I need to see the dinosaurs droppings. And we hear Malcolm about dino droppings. Yeah. And she's like,
elbows deep
in this massive pile of shit, like looking for evidence of this plant, this poisonous plant that could be killing, and she can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Which obviously you can't know because the animals are sick because of their genetic coding. But all the while this is happening, a storm is like rolling in. And back in the command room, we find this this kind of like busy hustle of everybody kind of like wrapping up their final bits, getting to the ferry on time before the storm leaves. It's the last ferry out of the dock off the island for the next little while. So there's a bit of a rush.
It's a skeleton crew.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Like you said. And Dennis is frantically checking all the cameras, like timing.
Because he has
like minutes.
A very short one shot window to get this done and get his ass out of there.
Exactly.
Why he waited till the fucking last, like he could have,
maybe whatever. It's the chaos of the moment, right? Like he's taking advantage of the fact that there's like, no one there.
Yeah.
Everybody is being distracted by the soft
launch. I just mean he could have done it while they were all at lunch.
Everybody was in the boardroom.
That's all I'm saying.
And that server was taking his sweet time getting one dish out of time.
But I feel like it's because it's going to be in any normal situation, it would be moments after he takes it that people realize that it's missing.
Yeah.
So probably he's like, he had to time it so that he gets it and he gets off the island like immediately.
Immediately.
Right?
Yeah. Exactly. But the tension is building because the storm is rolling in. We know shit hits going to hit the fan with the dinosaur soon. The storm, I already mentioned the storm, the ferry's leaving. And we see this like moment of Dennis kind of like bumbling, being like, well, so I restarted this and then debugged the phones and
nobody gives a shit.
It's like basically all of this like coding jargon excuse, blah blah blah. The systems are basically gonna shut down and reboot, no worries, it's something gonna happen. He's basically covering his tracks,
but nobody's even listening. He didn't have to say anything. So that's another thing of just showing like how everybody kind of hates him.
They don't respect him.
Yeah.
So the storm is starting to really hit with lightning and thunder crashing.
Ellie, that little moment of the guy on the dock on the phone and the like, waves are just like
10 minutes. And Ellie's like, I think I'm going to stay. And I'm like, boss queen, get it.
Also, though, I feel safer with that doctor in the Jeep about like being able to zip around than on the automated,
because you're locked in totally. Yeah. But they're not really gauging any of that right now.
No danger. No danger just yet. Like,
but for the real people, no.
The real ones.
Stick with the ones with the Jeep that can get away. Yeah. So Ellie chooses to stay, and the group rushes to like get back into their respective Jeeps because it's starting to pour. Mm-hmm. And the tour is cut short, and we back in the command room, Hammond is like, "Damn, this like soft launch is fucking failing. It's not going well."
Yeah. And he's really upset about that.
Yeah. So the Jeeps are kind of like making their way back out of the park. And Dennis is making his way to the embryo fridge to like time the cameras, make sure that he's not in the line of sight. And 3, 2, 1, they're down. He goes in and he starts like stacking and filling that shaving cream can.
And
he's like trying to do it fast. He's kind of shaking.
It's and we get to see like the library of embryos, right? How many different species they have. Yeah. And apparently like the more dangerous and exotic the species is, the more money he'll get. So he's just like of getting course, all of them, right? So the system reset has made much more of an impact than just the phones going down. The security systems all over the park are shutting off one by one. Not all of them, but like good chunks, which basically is a path for Dennis to like make his way out, including the park fences. Gulp. Dennis is now fleeing in his own Jeep through the jungle, through the pouring rain. Homeboy, like, could you not just have a moment to realize how silly and dangerous that is to be like Tokyo drifting in the fucking jungle with all that mud?
Oh my god, he's not even driving on the road.
No. And we'll get into it. But he is booking it to get to the ferry. But of course, he crashes into the only sign that tells him which way to go for the ferry. He chooses one way and he pedal to the metal. It's left. So he is fleeing. And back to the break room, Ray attempts to get the systems back online. He's like, what the hell? The phones, the security systems, it should have been like a very soft reboot, not this like blackout. Mm-hmm. And so Ray goes to break into Dennis's computer. And like you said, his whole desk is just a chaotic, sloppy. There's like garbage and files. And he just like pushes that off all to the side. He's like, oh, and he's trying to get into the system and he's writing code in that like a classic, blue window with white font,
yeah,
like typing in backslashes and underscores and stuff like that. Then it gets to a certain point where the code goes didn't say the magic word, which I said yesterday. And did you get it?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Samara didn't get it, but maybe she did. It didn't land in the
way
that I wanted.
But I was also desperately trying to not talk about
the pod. Fair enough.
Yeah.
So also something that I say on an average basis, like a daily basis, didn't say the magic word, because now the code initiates this like virus, so they can't turn anything back on, because he set this like hacker tripwire kind of thing to basically give him a window of time to get off the island. As a result, all of the Jeeps start to go offline.
Oh, I'm scared.
This is when the movie really starts to turn. It's pouring rain, it's getting dark, the Jeeps aren't working, they're outside of the T-Rex paddock. They are totally unaware of the chaos that is happening back at command room.
This is where I'm really having a hard time with the Hammond grandpa situation, because this is happening and his first reaction is not, holy fuck, my grandkids are out there.
Yep.
His first reaction is like, oh, this is so...
I can't believe this is happening on my launch. Like, this is not what I planned. Like, he is so obsessed.
Like, controlling, right?
Yes.
But it's like, your grandkids are out there and the power's down.
Not only out there, but just out there with strangers.
With strangers.
Which is
also crazy.
Fucking low key.
Yeah.
Irresponsible. Timmy, I identify so hard with this kid because he is bored as fuck in that car. Like, Lexi is like fanning herself because it's hot and sweaty, because it's hot, the storm, right? It's really humid. The lawyer is like dozing. Ian, Ellie, and Alan are in the other Jeep kind of like chit chatting. Or no, Ellie's not there. Sorry, it's just Alan and Ian. Mm-hmm. And Timmy's going hard on, like, let's explore every nook and cranny
of
this
Jeep. Timmy in this moment. Yeah, for sure.
And so he's digging around and he finds these night vision goggles.
Those things.
Oh my god, the lawyer's just like, what are those?
It looks expensive.
And then put it down. Put it away. Timmy's like playing around. Go off, Timmy. Like,
but
you
also,
do you.
I'm sorry. Mind your own fucking business, buddy. My grandpa built this shit.
My grandpa owns you.
I can do whatever. Like, you know what I mean?
Right. Like, what else are these for if not to, like, touch and play with? Like, get over yourself.
Yeah.
So as Timmy's kind of, like, messing around with these goggles, we hear boom.
Ugh.
Boom. Boom. We see the water cup shake. And, like, that like reverberation.
The tremors
coming, and we see it in the cups. And Timmy looks over in his goggles looking for the goat in the pouring rain. Where's the goat? A goat leg falls on the sunroof of their Jeep covered in blood. And we look up and we see a hand of the T-Rex on the fucking non-electrified fence. And we see her gulp this goat in its gullet. Mm-hmm. And oh, like, oh fuck.
I'm currently, my arms are crossed.
You are clenched.
Over. I'm so clenched. Because this scene and one other scene later that we'll talk mm-hmm. are two of the most, like, the deepest childhood, like, fear,
terror
moments. Like, this and the kitchen scene uh-huh. are the scariest shit.
Woo, baby. I get it.
Even watching it now, like, even at watching it the other day, I was like,
oh, we know it's coming, but holy fuck, the suspense is building. And seeing that little hand on
that tiny
hand, the T-Rex little claw on the, I'm just like mimicking the claw. Yeah. Like, it's fucking go time because those fences are not on. And the lawyer bails.
He like, blah, 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 and just fucking books it.
He leaves those babies alone in that Jeep.
He left us.
But do you know what fucks me up too?
What?
Is that Grant and Malcolm didn't immediately go to be with those children. They saw him. He's like, when you gotta go. You know for a fact that man isn't shitting right now. Like, no. That's crazy. Like, yeah. And those two little children are alone in that Jeep. And even if you don't like kids, even if you're not a parent, it doesn't matter, which we know Malcolm is a parent. How could you not instantly go,
are they okay?
Are they okay? Let's just go into this same Jeep with them. Make sure, you know what I mean? Like,
actually, I think at one point he does go check. This is before the lawyer bails. And Malcolm is like, are the kids okay? And Grant's like, I didn't ask.
Yeah.
Like, how could you not ask if the kids are okay? It's scary. All the lights are off. But like you said, it's still not like registering.
Yeah.
I'm going to go make sure those kids are okay.
Well, and it's like, they haven't seen the claw. They haven't seen, like, they don't know the danger yet, which is kind of fair. But it's also just like, even if there wasn't a T-Rex standing right next to them, it's a tropical storm and they're alone and the power's out. That's scary.
In itself. Totally.
Period. Totally. So that really, like, I don't know. That
it grinds your gears.
You are like,
me up.
Yeah.
Those poor kitties.
Also because Lex looks like Avery and I'm just like, so
you want to jump in there
protective.
Shout out Avery. So the lawyer bails and like rushes to the nearby bathroom, and that we get the quip of like, when you gotta go.
Yeah.
But then we start to hear ping, 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 and the fence is being snapped apart by the T-Rex. So the T-Rex stomps. She like says, I'm here. Out of the cage and screams. And I'm sure every Jurassic
Park head,
the
T-Rex screams?
Yeah, like roars. I'm here. But it's like they combined a lion roar with like a walrus roar.
They mixed a lot of shit.
All of these animal sounds to get this like piercing, but also like guttural, wrenchingly
deep
and
it's so good.
It's a big sound, you know? Yes. Like it's like a big, like on that level of like,
oh, this is
pure, like, primordial fear,
right?
Like, you feel it in your evolution bones.
Yeah.
Here at this point,
it's your monkey brain is popping off.
Popping off. Alan whispers to stay still because she, like, the T-Rex's vision is totally impacted by movement.
I just don't, that has never made sense to me.
So, does it just never see anything?
It's so dumb.
Oh, whatever.
But.
Yeah.
I think the T-Rex was just straight up dumb, like the very small brain.
Dumb.
She is doing her best. Okay. But Lexi, this is to your point, these kiddos have no fucking idea what to do. So Lexi grabs a flashlight and starts waving it around being like, well, let's just see. And the T-Rex is immediately drawn towards their Jeep. And the T-Rex starts to fuck with that Jeep because it's like, what is this?
Yeah.
I want to eat this, but doesn't really fully understand that there's kids inside until it kind of like clocks the movement on the inside of the Jeep. And this is where the scene of the movie where my sister and I would reenact being in this Jeep.
And with, yes, Dakota's hands are up.
Because they have big, like, sunroofs,
huge
right?
sunroofs.
So it's like, mouth is on the other side. It knocks this glass out and the kids are like
holding the glass
up with their hands and feet.
Oh my goodness.
With this T-Rex's mouth on the other side.
Trying to like,
she's also reenacting something here. But it's this absolute chaos now happening, and the kids are just fish in a barrel at this point for this T-Rex. The T-Rex flips the Jeep over and starts tearing at the tires because he thinks it's like an animal, right? So he's going at it.
Yeah, it's not an understanding of these tiny things inside. The Jeep itself is an animal.
Yes.
Right?
And so she's standing on this Jeep, but the pure weight of this creature is like crippling this Jeep underneath
and it's
them.
Sinking into really deep mud.
Really deep mud. And the kids are like getting squished underneath.
It's
like,
so scary.
It's so scary because it not only is this massive terrifying creature, it really taps into a bit of a primordial fear of mine of just like enclosed spaces and not being able to like move my arms.
It's this confinement.
Oh, it makes me feel sick to my stomach. Because the T-Rex is like fucking with this Jeep, it's like pushing it further and further towards the edge of that massive ledge where it kind of like falls off into the cage. Alan gets out with a flare. And
fucking
you can
finally,
this man, you know, finally clocks in. And he like slowly gets the T-Rex's attention, and he, for a moment, he's just like, holy fuck, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. But he like waves it gently and then chucks it. And the T-Rex is like, well, golly gee, I think I'm going to go over and see what that is. Sweet baby Malcolm, though, thinks he's helping, grabs a flare too, sets it off inside the Jeep, first of
over
all.
Here, oh, over here! Over here! Over here! And but he's saying go to the kids, right? But he didn't I feel like he saw the first part of the plan and he's like, okay, and
I
then
get
he
it.
Starts it and then didn't clock the second part of the plan. And then he's just like holding the
flare. And Alan's like, Ian, freeze.
Yeah.
But he's bolting, right? Naturally, like fight and flight's kicking in at this point.
Yeah.
And Malcolm is running with flare, ditches the flare. T-Rex is like, nah, you are looking tasty. So she's chasing him,
which is
so hilarious, tasty. And bonks into him, launches him into the stratosphere. No, basically tries to go for Malcolm as he's making his way to the bathroom where the lawyer is, and the lawyer is shitting his pants in the bathroom, being like, because he thought he was safe. And to be fair, if Malcolm didn't come out and get him, I think the lawyer would have survived. Oh. But the classic scene where, you know, the T-Rex dismantles this entire small bathroom.
The whole thing collapses.
Down,
but there you go. Another thing of the corners being cut, right?
Yep. She barely had to touch it for that thing to collapse around him.
Yeah.
And this lawyer's just sitting on the toilet, panicked, and gets chomped.
Like, I always thought his pants were down, but he's just wearing shorts.
Yes.
But yeah, and he gets eaten.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like grabbed and like
flung around
like a dog with a bone. Just like. Yeah. And Ian gets like tossed. He's injured, but he gets tossed
and
like
covered up.
Covered
so
up
he's
with
kind
leaves.
Of. Yeah. Hidden.
So he's kind of hidden and he's passed out. Alan is running over now. Now he's running over to get the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like helping Lex get out from underneath. Timmy's like, I'm stuck. My foot is stuck. And the T-Rex goes and comes back. And this scene is really great because they're trying the mechanics of the scene alone, like what Spielberg did here, was just really neat because these massive robots, these animatronics, and the Jeep getting spun on its head, them trying to like get on the other side so they're not being seen. But then I think the T-Rex kind of forgets they're there and just goes back at chomping the shit out of this this Jeep with Timmy still inside.
Well, they're kind of on the other side of it, so it can't really see them, and they're moving with
the Jeep
the way that it's getting pushed.
Yeah.
It's very choreographed.
Very
for sure.
Choreographed. They can't get Timmy out in time. So Alan gets Lexi on his back, and they're kind of like, they're making their way down the side of this really tall, scary, sharp ledge, hanging onto the wires of the fencing, and like making their way down. And the Jeep is like being pushed over top of them, and it gets launched. The T-Rex, she just like pushes that Jeep over the edge. The Jeep falls into the tree, and Timmy is... They have no idea what's going on with Timmy. Timmy's either in there or he could have been eaten. We don't know. And so we now flash back to the command room. Ray, Ellie, and Robert and Hammond are trying to decipher Dennis's code like one by one. Hammond directs Robert to get his grandchildren back. Mm-hmm. And Ellie opts to go with them. She's like, fuck yeah, I'm going with you. But they can't get back. They can't get the park back online without Dennis.
Mm-hmm.
We now flash to Dennis speeding along in the middle of the pouring jungle with the monsoon coming down. The muddy roads are making it really difficult for him to get traction, and he's running out of time. The ferry is leaving. He obviously crashes. Like, that's going to happen. He gets out to somehow create like a pulley winch system of him like getting the Jeep out, because the road's right there. He can see the ferry sign, all the while he is being hunted by our dear old friend, the Dilophosaurus.
It's like, and then it's like,
yeah. Beautiful.
Thank
you. The Dilophosaurus is investigating Dennis, and Dennis like threatens to run him over when he manages to get the car back down. Like, oh, you stupid dumb animal, I'm gonna run over you. Not really, because it's a smaller creature, like it's a smaller carnivore, but I don't think Dennis fully understands the fact that this is a dangerous animal.
Yeah.
And Dennis slips and the dino takes her chance.
You can tell that he's scared. He's like, okay,
I'm going to run you over, leave me alone. And she spits that poisonous goo all over him and like blinds him. And he like bonks his head trying to get back into the Jeep. And as he falls, the shaving cream can like
tumbles down
and like gets covered in mud.
He gets in the Jeep. He closes the door. Thinking he's safe. And then it's in the passenger seat. He's like, hey,
I don't know how the hell it got in there, but that's awesome.
Well, I think as he like fell over, she got in.
But it's like, I don't know. Of course. It's so funny. It's like such a doofy scene too, because Dennis is like he's a bit of a bumbling genius, but and then he gets destroyed in the car, obviously. So we cut back to Alan and Lexi, who are rightfully freaking the fuck out. And Alan is like being the pragmatic, calm and steady, being like, it's okay. Lex is like, he left us. And he's just like, I am not going to do that. And you can see her immediately like, and she like hides in the culvert where he goes to climb the fucking tree, because the car is still up there. And so Dr. Grant is like climbing up. He finally makes his way to the Jeep, and there's sweet little Timmy. Like, the Jeep is like fully vertical. It's not like sitting horizontal and whatnot. So Timmy's like tucked in on like the floor part of the passenger seat, and he goes, I threw up. Aww. And I'm like, boo-boo, of course you did. It's okay. Yeah. You're here. And he's like, it's okay, we're gonna get out. And he like, Alan grabs the wheel, not really knowing, and he like cranks it, which means the car is even more vulnerable to falling.
Yeah, because the way that the car is, it's like nose down, and the wheels were turned, so the wheels were kind of like wedging them. And
perfectly aligned.
Yeah, and then just when he turns the wheel, it like straightens out the tires.
Yeah,
and then it just makes it like that. Its purchase is like more slippery.
Oh my goodness! And so as they're like getting Tim out, as he's getting Tim out, it goes whoom, the car like jolts. And then all of a sudden it's like, no, time to get out. They make it their way out. And Dr. Grant's like, did your dad ever build you a treehouse before? And Timmy's like, no. And Alan goes, me neither. Okay. So it's kind of like being in a treehouse. Don't look down and climb. And they're kind of having a cute little banter, just his attempt to like calm this kid down. But then the Jeep like shifts again above them, and the music picks up, and they're like, go, go, go. And the Jeep starts to fall in time, just like right behind them as they're like making their way down. They make it down just in time, but the Jeep crashes over top of them, and we hear Tim go, we're back in the car again.
Yeah.
Which is super cute. So Ellie and Robert are speeding up to the enclosure where the T-Rex is and the other Jeeps are, to only find the one Jeep. So they find parts of the lawyer everywhere, and they find Ian like moaning under some tree branches. They manage to get Ian back into the Jeep before they speed off. Ellie notices the other cars off the side of the ledge that we were talking about, and it's like below. And she's like, the other Jeep. So they manage to get down to the lower ground where the other three were. And she finds tracks of three people walking away. So there's kind of like a moment of relief, being like, okay, they're alive, but they're nowhere to be seen. But while this is happening, Ian is alone in the Jeep.
It's so scary.
He is injured to the point where he can't move. Robert and Ellie are racing back to him, and we hear the approaching footsteps and the music and
but it's like very silent at first. So they're down there inspecting. He's alone, silently sitting in this Jeep,
like talking to himself,
having a moment, kind of like. And then he sees the tremors again in the footprint in the water. Sees the tremors.
Anybody else seeing this?
Oh no. Okay. And then he's like, "Hurry up! Like, get back!" And then the she comes back.
The chase scene. So they get in the Jeep. they are speeding, and that T-Rex is huge, so it can run pretty, not super fast like the raptors, but it's able to keep up with a speeding jeep with his little arms kind of like racing after them, and they're rightfully freaking the fuck out, but speeding as fast as they can, and they manage to get away, but not by the like by the skin of their teeth, really. And he's like ever the comedian in the sense that Ian goes, "You think they'll keep that in the tour?" Like, always cracking jokes. But this is the part of the movie where there's a little bit of a lull where Lex, Tim, and Alan find a large tree to come up, to climb up and to stay off the jungle floor for the night, which is super smart. And Tim mentions that he doesn't like trees anymore. And, you know, so as they find a spot to like safely sit, they kind of chit chat about the dinosaurs and how the ones that they're seeing kind of like in like the valley in front of them are like the vegetarians like Lex. The Brachiosaurus, they're singing and eating trees, and Timmy tells like
Metasauruses?
No. This is so cute. And Timmy's like telling jokes to help them fall asleep, and Alan says he's gonna stay awake all night to make sure that they're safe, and he like throws the raptor claw off the edge of the tree. Yeah, he's done. He's like, I don't need this anymore. So we're back in the main park, and Hammond is in the cafeteria dining area. This is the scene where we really get to see this like calculated man, right? He's eating the ice cream that's all melted because the power's out. Ellie comes to tell him that Malcolm is sedated with morphine and he's okay with now. And Hammond like goes off on talking about like how his first ever attraction leaving Scotland was like a flea circus and this motorized gimmick, and how he really wanted to make the real thing. Like, he didn't want the illusion. He really wanted to wow people and like have this kind of like power trip.
Yeah, I see that, but it just felt really vulnerable to me. I don't know. To me, it was like an endearing moment.
I have a hard time seeing him as endearing. I see him as the villain, right?
Yeah, for sure. No, for sure. I'm just saying, like, I always found this part really kind of endearing.
Yeah.
Of this, like, stressed, again, like, me seeing him as, like, a stressed grandpa. And that's not really...
Well, he can be both, a stressed grandpa and a villain.
Yeah, he's both, yeah. For sure.
But, like, Ellie freaks out on him a little bit here and says how he doesn't have any respect for the power, for the illusion that he created, not really understanding any kind of implications of the choices that he's making, blinded basically by this goal. And she mentions that the ice cream is good, and Hammond goes, spared no expense. Always mind on the money and the prize, right? So we're back in the tree with Tim, Lex, and Alan, and they're feeding the brachiosauruses, and, you know, the funny part of this movie where the dinosaur sneezes all over Lex.
That's not funny. I hate that part.
I thought it was hilarious.
I feel bad for her.
I don't
think like bodily stuff is funny.
Oh, I find it so funny.
It disgusts me, first of all. I can't even watch it. I close my eyes.
Because it's all over her face and in her mouth.
Talk to me about it. What's wrong with you?
What have I done?
I don't want to hear that.
Moving on. I already like briefly talked about how like they're sick because of the errors in the genetic code, but as they climb out of the tree, they find a small little hatchery of eggs. And they're going, what? I thought they're all female. And Alan starts to put things together, because if they're using some frog DNA, frogs are known, like some species of frogs have been known to change sexes in times of evolutionary
need. How the fuck they overlooked that?
Power and greed, my friend.
How?
Yeah.
Like, that's a fact that he's like, oh, wait a second. Actually, I remember this.
Because he's a paleontologist. Like, he's not even like a frog scientist. Like,
that's what I'm saying. How did the fucking frog guy not bring that up?
The frog guy really shit the bed on that one. But this is clear evidence that
he's like, finally, frogs are going to have their day in the sun. I will do anything to make this happen for frogs.
Don't tell them the really important secret of the changing sexes, though, okay? Because the frogs need a win.
Frogs need this.
We need a win. But the hatched eggs are straight up evidence that these dinosaurs are fucking. Like, they are reproducing. They are not just scissoring. They are doing full pen. Yeah. And they are populating this island now with, you know, not just females. So flashback to the command room, and we're discussing like how there's only actually one way to reboot the park now, because Dennis's code has really locked them out from doing anything. So they have to shut the whole system down to wipe out the code and reboot the system. And Ray's like, I'm going to turn off all of these switches and all the lights will go off. The computers will shut down. Security will go down. Hold on to your butts moment again. And success, Dennis's computers shut down and reboot, but all of the lights are still off. And so Ray's like, I'm going to have to go manually reboot this.
And it's on the other side of the compound, but it's not on the other side of the island. Like, no. It's pretty close.
Pretty close.
They don't even have to go into the park. to do it. It's like, but he'll have to like go outside, go across. Also, it's the Jurassic Park equivalent of having to go into the garage or the basement and reset the breakers.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Like, you blow a breaker in the kitchen and you have to go downstairs and pump flip it.
Yeah, flip the switch, basically. So Ray's going to go do the circuit breaker thing, and the rest of them are going to go to the emergency bunker. Which, by like, why aren't we in the emergency bunker from like get-go? Like, the amount of guns and first aid and rations that are in that place, like, it's just the soft launch is really highlighting the gaps, I think, in their thinking. Yeah. Of just like basic safety procedures.
That's supposed to be a silent toy.
Sorry, I'm like smacking my banana around. I'm like really fired up. Really
waving that banana around.
Okay, so, you know, we get the classic Gallimimus herd scene where they're...
Sure, you would find a way to make that
loud.
Loud, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
It's okay. Smack. No, it's okay.
I wonder if they can hear it.
Oh, how could for sure. Yeah.
Sorry. Right, okay. We're back with the Alan and the two kids. The Gallimimus scene where they see like the, oh, they do move in herds moment again. And, oh, look, they're like flying like a flock of birds. And then the classic scene of Timmy going, they're flocking this way. So they manage to find shelter behind like this fallen down tree. We also then get this beautiful scene of like the T-Rex coming out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Snatching
even
one of those.
Seeing them running, my first thought is, what are they running from?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're just like, after all the trauma they've been through, and they're just like watching it. I'm like,
and
no, you guys,
like, into it.
Hide.
Get out of there. So back in the bunker, Ellie is pacing back and forth. Ray isn't back yet, so she decides to go turn the power back on. Robert goes with her, and Hammond will walk them through the power over the walkie-talkies. But Hammond's like, makes this super sexist remark, being like, well, you're a woman and I'm a man, I should go. And I'm like, this old ass man thinks he's gonna be able to like
have
outrun
you seen
these?
How fit she is.
Yeah,
like
Laura Dern can get it. She is capable. Mm-hmm. She is smart. And she's like, we will talk the politics of sexist remarks later, mm-hmm. of, well, who can do what and when, but you mm-hmm. fucking stay here. I love that moment.
Sit down.
Mm. So Ellie and Robert make their way to like past the raptor enclosure. They see that it's been like torn apart. They're escaped. They're free. Robert Muldoon's like, well, this is not good, because he knows intimately about how these raptor women are gonna fuck shit up. Yeah. And they kind of clock the maintenance shed through like a small like area of forest. And it's like, we can make it if we run. And then he says, no. Because we are being hunted. And Robert points out that they are being stalked by a raptor from ahead, and Ellie has to make her way on her own while Robert kind of like stays in line of sight with the raptor. Mm-hmm. So she pulls like the best acrobatic scene of all time. She's like jumping, she's like Olympic gymnastic,
yeah.
swinging herself over tree branches, and
it's scary. It's like a short distance, but she's like,
she's got a sprint.
Yeah.
And she makes it. Phew. She closes the door behind her in the maintenance shed, and Hammond now begins to guide Ellie through the maintenance shed, because it's all pitch black. Mm-hmm. And like, it's a maze. Like, what's yeah. wrong with having like subtle signs of like,
but then
breaker shed here,
like, there's even a back and forth between Hammond and Ian of yeah. like how to direct her.
Yeah,
because Ian's like, that's not like, and Hammond's like,
I know how to read a schematic.
He like takes over, because she's like, I don't know what the fuck. And then
the instructions
like,
were not it.
Ian's like, no, just, you see this, follow this. Yeah. Like, very simple.
Because it was leading her to dead ends.
Yeah.
So we cut back to the Alan and the kids. They're at the base of a very large electrical fence. It's like the main park fence to get out and back to the main like building area. But because the power's off, the fences are off. So they double check. It's not on. For the record, all three of them could have squeezed through. Like,
yeah.
those holes were huge. Like, Timmy yeah. could have been like, whoosh, like
it's also
right
just
through.
Like wire. Like, they could probably bend it too. But also, why is Dr. Grant trying to scare these children to death?
Lighten the mood a little bit.
Oh,
no.
My God.
He like reaches out and grabs a fence and pretends to get electrified, and they scream, and Ellie's like, that's, or not Ellie,
their little hearts can't take much more. I feel like it's been so much. Like,
it's like, that was not the time for that.
No,
joke, that was not okay.
No.
So he's like joking around, playing with the electrical fence, shows them that it's not on, and he's like, I guess we have to climb it. And so they start climbing in sequence with Ellie figuring out how to turn the whole park dam back on.
Yeah.
which is like it's one of the most, in my opinion, one of the more intense parts.
And
of
you
movie.
See fences at the bottom as she's going through one by one, turning them on. Also, why is red on? Red is on, green is off.
Yeah, weird. So Ellie has to go through this like sequence of like pumping up the charge on the breaker, and like Dakota said, like turning the fences back on one by one, like click on, click on,
well,
click
all
on.
The systems,
all yeah. the systems, and they like. Simultaneously, they are making their way just over the tall ass fence now. Timmy's lagging behind because, in my opinion, he's had a little bit more trauma than the other two. He's, you know, banged
physical
up.
Physical trauma,
yeah,
too.
Banged
yeah.
up a lot. And he's like, poor little boy. Like, he's, what, 3 feet tall? Like, yeah. making his way around. And they're kind of a cute little banter being like, I loved climb. And Lex is like, I can go faster than you. Mm. Maybe as like an attempt to normalize what's going on. I'm not sure.
100% children, their minds, like they will go above and beyond to protect.
Oh, each other, especially right? like older sister style.
Yeah. Oh, and just like their brains protecting themselves.
Yeah.
Of like not having this be like as fucking detrimental yeah. as it is.
Yeah. They're compartmentalizing as we speak. But Timmy needs to hurry the fuck up. Not knowing all of this is happening at the same time. The alarm, so Ellie gets to the main part of the park that they're at, and so alarms are going off, being like ring, ring, ring. And Lex and Alan are already on the ground on the other side, being like, Timmy, you need to hurry up now. Go, 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 jump, jump, jump. And he's like, I can't jump, I can't jump. But he manages to psych himself up to count down to jump, and he's like, three. And then at two, he gets fucking launched off of that fence because he
flies backwards,
electrocuted off,
yeah. off
of that fence, super fried up. The lights come on around them just in time for a raptor to say hello to Ellie in the maintenance shed. So she slams the door on the raptor to have, you know, the arm of Ray, Mr. Arnold, kind of like reach her over shoulder. She feels this instant state of relief, being like, oh my god, thank god I'm not alone, and it's just an arm.
Yeah.
And she's like, ugh! And then back,
she kind of goes to turn, and then she's just holding the arm.
The arm. She's like, ah! It's like, oh no. She manages to make it out, though. All the while Alan is doing like CPR on this kid. Robert Muldoon, however, is still in the thick of it. He thinks he has this upper hand because he's clocking this unbeknownst raptor in the front. But boy, like, follow your own damn advice. You literally said they hunt in packs and approach from the side. Like, so silly Billy didn't follow his own advice.
Yeah. Also, he should have shot that raptor already.
Instantly.
If you have eyes on that thing,
boom,
take it out.
Right. Like, I think maybe he got stuck into like his old patterns of like, it's the game, it's the hunt. Mm-hmm. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But that. Mm, clever girl, that line, that is my internet handle for so many things. Clever girl. But instead of E's, it's threes. Clever girl's
yeah,
always
yeah,
taken.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah. Anyways, and he's dead now because
yeah, he dies.
Dr. Grant is attempting to bring this little boy back from the edge of death again.
Yeah, he has to fully do
CPR.
Like, CPR. Yeah,
and he comes back. He's like, I'm here. And they, as a group, you know, make their way back because they're back in the main part of the
where the humans are supposed to be.
The buildings, right? Yeah. Like the main buildings. And so they make it into the cafeteria. It's kind of like this false sense of hope where they see all the food. We're inside. It's okay. Mm-hmm. We can
safe.
Breathe.
Yeah.
Because they were out in the thick of things. Mm-hmm. The other group have been managing the dinos on the inside for a little while now. Mm-hmm. So they know they're not safe. So they start like going hard on this like buffet style.
Well, he leaves
Timmy
them
down.
There. He puts
yeah.
Timmy down. He says, I'm going to find Ellie. We're going to get you help. Just hang tight here for a minute. So Dr. Grant leaves right away.
Yeah.
The kids are feeling relaxed, feeling safe. They mm-hmm. see the food. They're enjoying a nice little meal.
Mm-hmm.
Lex has the Jell-O, right?
How can you not eat Jell-O and not reenact? Like, I can't not eat Jell-O and reenact
you, and you,
this.
And you shake it.
Shaking the spoon like,
Because she doesn't have eyes on it. Timmy's looking at her. They're facing each other. And it's like the wall is like, it's almost like it's a painting, but it's like paper. Like you can see shadow behind
see-through.
It. So there's like painting of raptors. And then Timmy sees this shadow move past like the image.
Real image of the raptor.
And so he knows that there's one back there. And Lex is just looking at him, seeing him become very scared. She's holding the Jell-O and she's shaking.
So
she's
scary.
Just like, oh my God.
So that brief moment of what they thought was like relief mm-hmm. and safety is immediately ripped away from them. And
now they're alone.
The poor babies are alone and they book it to the kitchen because they're right by the cafeteria, right?
This is the scariest. As a kid, especially, this yeah. part, the kitchen scene is so scary.
It's A.
I noticed that I do this a lot. I start listing A, B, and C. But A, you're alone. Safety was ripped away from you. The monsters are inside now. And they clock the fact that these raptors can open doors. Growing up, I was like, well, of course they can open doors. Our cats can open the doors. Like, I grew up with very smart cats. Mm-hmm. And we had the latch doors, right?
Sure, yeah.
And if cats can open the door, you know that raptor is going to be able to open the door. But they are...
Gimli knows what the door does.
Gimli.
But he...
Sweet, sweet
he
idiot.
He can't quite figure it out. But he'll try... He always tries. It's very cute. But he'll paw at the door knob. Like, he's like, if I can just... But he doesn't quite,
fully get it. But this, like you said, this is the... One of the most iconic scenes for its scariness, but for its, like, really interesting and genius storytelling. Because at this point, we have not seen a lot of the raptors yet. Mm-hmm. And we get two hunting these kids as these kids are on all fours, scurrying in between this industrial kitchen. Everything's shiny and new, and you can kind of see your reflections in the metallic stainless steel countertops and doors. And these kids are, like, scurrying through the counters. And this raptor is, like, stalking because she can smell the kids. And then one gets on top of the counter and is, like, looking around. And they're, like, honking, like, wah, wah, like, talking to each other. And the raptors are literally milliseconds away from catching Timmy at one point. And Lexi, full big sister style, starts to make a distraction. So they come for her instead. Mm-hmm. And they race after her and get confused by her reflection in the stainless steel and, like, bonk their heads. And
that smart.
Oh, no. And she manages to, like, get away. And they scurry. Timmy manages to, like, run away. And they trap one in the, like, the deep freeze.
Yeah, they lock one in the freezer. Which
open
is,
that,
like,
door, bitch. Right?
Fully locked in.
Fully locked in. So Ellie and Alan are holding the door in the main command room because the kids managed to get out and reunite with the adults. And in her badass hackery ways, Lex gets on that computer, Dennis's computer, and starts figuring out what files to reinitiate the security system.
Okay, so this is the part that I was whispering to Samara yesterday about, that for the first time I understood it. When I watched it this time.
Okay.
So when Alan's holding the door and he's, like, trying to hold it and trying to lock the door, mm-hmm. and he says, Ellie, boot up the door locks.
Yeah.
Until I never heard that.
Yeah.
I always heard, ew, they pooed on the door locks. So I always thought the reason why he wasn't locking the door was because he didn't want to touch the poo on the door locks. And I'm like, these diabolical geniuses pooping on the door locks so that the humans cannot lock them. But he's saying boot up the door locks because it's not manual.
I refuse that reality. The dinosaurs have pooed on the door locks.
No. That's canon now.
Yeah.
Spielberg, if you are listening to this,
we
need to do a rewrite. Because
of course
that
he's
is
listening.
He must.
Yeah. Lex, in her hackery ways, or just general computer science.
An icon. A hacking icon.
She saves the fucking day.
She is our hacking foremother.
She is the one that set us above all the rest. Mm-hmm. We are independent. We are capable. We can find those files and turn the security system back on. No problem. She managed to find... it kind of looks like a computer game, really, like the system that she's, like, navigating, but she finds the files, sets it off, the door locks are on, phone, security, power, you name it, it is online.
Hell yeah.
So Grant calls the security or the emergency bunker and says something like, I got your kids, let's get off the fucking island.
Yeah, like, call the helicopter or whatever.
Over on Hammond's side of things, we see him on the phone, but then we hear gunshots and screaming because the raptors had broken through the glass windows to make their way into the command room. And they are, he's like freaking out, like grandpa style, being like, where are my kids? Where are my kids?
Grandpa style.
And so Ellie and Alan are leading the kids out of the area. They manage to, like, get their way up at the into the ceiling.
Yeah, they go into, like, the air vent or whatever in the ceiling
to evade the raptor.
Ah, and there's a really scary part where they kind of, like, they kick the ladder away, and then there's, like, a leg hanging out, and the raptors are, like, jumping
at it. But smart girl is smart. She knows they're up there, so she sticks her head up, and it happens to be the ceiling tile that Lexi is on. And they manage to pull her. There's a lot of close calls here in this scene. So we have this, like,
a very iconic scene too, where the group makes their way out of the ceiling into that main kind of like lobby entrance area with that giant fossilized skeleton of the T-Rex. Mm-hmm. And they, of course, the only way to get down is to climb their way down through the fossil that's hanging from the ceiling. And of course, the raptor manages to like find them and land, like get on the fossilized creature as well. So all of these like disjointed tails and head and all of
they're
these
all
people
spinning around
and it's really disorienting. And slowly, like or not slowly, quickly, they all start to like fall from the ceiling and the bones are crashing down around them. There's now two raptors that's cornered the four of them in the middle of this lobby. Mm-hmm. And it is not looking good. Mm-hmm. And this is a bit of a classic Jurassic Park sequence in all of the movies where there's a group of people in the middle and two raptors are coming at it from either side. And they're kind of preparing to die. Like, that is not a good, that's not a good outlook as to what's happening. But our queen, the T-Rex queen herself, comes in clutch and just busts in at the perfect
moment.
She
just appears there.
Yeah. Just like, hey,
you don't
didn't hear
her
me.
Come into the room at all. She's just there.
Right? But like, amazing. We hear her coming a mile away. Out
earlier.
The wild, of course. But
we're distracted right now.
But as one of the raptors goes to lunge at the group, the T-Rex, she comes in clutch at the end and goes for a little lunchy munchy, bunches down, and the other raptor's like, hey, that's my friend, and like goes up and starts to attack. And then now it's just like dinosaur versus dinosaur. They're distracted. The humans are like, now's our chance. Mm-hmm. Let's get the fuck out of Dodge. Mm-hmm. But the queen of the island, the true OG herself, manages to kill both of the raptors
as this is happening, and then the banner falls slowly down
and we get the sound of her roaring. The banner falls, the T-Rex roars in a celebratory fashion as the humans make their way out, and the queen reigns supreme as she takes over as the rightful royal leader of this island.
Amazing.
That was art. They finally get on the helicopter.
Whew!
They make it out. Light piano music starts to play, the classic theme. And while the kids are fast asleep, like knocked out basically on Alan.
Oh my god, yeah.
Like
and like cuddling him.
Well, it's like he's the beacon of safety for both of them, right? And they have had like a pretty traumatic couple hours.
You might say.
And they've basically trauma napped on Dr. Grant. And Alan is looking longingly out the window at a small flock of birds. I think they're pelicans, but they're like flying in unison. And he like softly smiles to himself. This chaotic, traumatic, ultimate showdown. And we have this like helicopter scene of them going off to safety and leaving the chaos behind on the island. And Alan's just like, birds, the true wondrous beasts that have evolved from that. And all is well. Nothing bad ever happens again. And the island just happens to turn into like this beautiful oasis of dinosaurs.
That's where King Kong lives.
That's where King Kong lives. Godzilla stops by every once in a while for lunch. And nobody ever goes there and gets eaten again. JK. There's like two more movies where shit goes down.
Well, this part's happening and Prob was like, that's not the end. No, they have to go to New York.
Or they have to go to LA.
Where's the T-Rex with the pool? That's part two.
But that's the end of the movie.
Wow.
Oh,
wow.
I just... It's the perfect movie.
It's great. Also, it's 2 hours and it goes by so fast.
Yeah, it's just over two, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
because I when I was watching it the other day, I was like, wow, it's crazy that Dennis creates so much chaos and then he's dispatched so early in the movie. And then I paused it and I was like, oh, we're like 2/3 of the way through the movie when he dies. But it's just so quick. Like, it's so intense. Everything. You're
so many moving pieces. Mm-hmm. And I can understand that this came from a book which I haven't read, which I'm definitely
into reading. A book by Michael Crichton,
which I have read some of his other horror.
It's good. He's pretty prolific. He's done a lot of stuff.
But Ty and I were talking about how like the reading the book Jurassic Park would be incredible because you do get that depth, you do get the background and the story, and you probably really do get to get a better glimpse at how shoddily this whole park was like rushed together and whatnot. And
there's always so much more,
of course,
intel, right?
But this movie did such an incredible job start to finish with capturing the essence, I think, of the story perfectly. The horror of it, the the literal trailblazing nature of the cinematography, the animatronics, the CGI, like, it was a cultural shift, a cultural milestone of movie making. And I can't imagine my life without this movie in it.
You know, it's hard hitting, it's on the face, but it's also really nuanced. There's mm-hmm. always something else to see, to kind of like focus on when you're like watching it.
Like the poo on the door handles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love this movie too. I really do. I have deep memories of it. It's the first probably scary movie mm-hmm. I ever saw, but it's not one that I was too, like, I loved watching this movie. And I mm-hmm. remember huddling up with my sister during the kitchen scene and covering her eyes with the blanket and being so scared. I remember playing dinosaurs you know,
digging holes in
jumping
the backyard.
Around in the living room after we finished watching the movie. Like,
yeah, it, like, it moves you. And I'm so glad we got to watch this together.
That was awesome.
So let's rate this movie. Mm-hmm. Dakota, do you think you'll ever watch this movie again?
Yeah,
that goes without saying.
Yeah.
Oh, favorite character.
Oh, man. Okay.
It's Ian Malcolm.
I have to admit.
Mm-hmm. I think Ellie is up there for sure. Mm-hmm. She's a smart, capable, independent woman who doesn't wait for men in any regard to do anything. She just does the logical thing, which is
and to get
respect.
That in the 90s too, and also to get that their arc doesn't end up with them like kissing at the end.
Yes,
you know, like I really like that.
Yes, she's not just a side piece for the main character, like the main male character storyline, which is really great.
Yeah.
So from like an empowered feminist point of view, definitely Ellie. From a horn dog like myself, it's got to be Ian Malcolm too. Like, I just love his critical thinking. I love his challenge. I love his just weird, suave, awkward, flirty nature to him. And just the one-liners. Mm-hmm. So good.
Yeah, same. It's the sideways POV, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just that a little bit twisted. He doesn't exactly bring comic relief or levity, but he's that sober voice coming from someone who's so, like, sideways is really interesting.
Yeah.
Like, it's an interesting dynamic, and it's Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah.
So.
And trying to imagine that character being played by anyone else, I don't think it would work.
Because
he brings that level of odd to it, and it
odd.
Just...
Oddness. Yeah. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Best for sure.
I love someone challenges the status quo, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We were discussing briefly about how to rate this movie. We could do, like, jiggle jellos.
Oh, you had said before, let's do it at the pillows.
Oh, yes. So, how many sequenced shirtless Jeff Goldblum pillows out of 10?
100.
100 million.
I want to drown in the pillows.
I want to feel the sequences scratch my skin.
I want to fill a empty pool with the pillows and dive in Scrooge McDuck style.
Yes.
And get cut by the sequins.
It's all worth
it.
It's all worth it.
Yeah.
And just to have the kazoo soundtrack of Jurassic Park playing in the background
as I do the backstroke. Yeah.
Yeah. In its true glory.
Spitting sequins
with like a fountain.
Also playing in the background.
For sure. Oh. Thank you for that.
Good.
That was great. Have fun editing this. Are we at 5 hours or what?
Yeah, almost.
That's the rest of my day. That's all right.
Okay. It is time to pick.
Oh, my next one.
Your next
my
movie.
Turn already?
Here we go.
Here we go.
Shake it like a jello.
Shake it like a jello. She's okay. Nodding. She's nodding. She's excited.
Interesting. I think I've seen this.
Think you've seen this.
I think I've seen this.
It's interesting. We're having a return of somebody already.
Also, this is my first scary.
It is scary.
It's a thriller.
It's a thriller.
Not a horror, but a thriller. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited. This one is, this is one where it was like, I was the perfect age when this came out.
Ooh. I'm so excited.
And it was
excited.
Just like an early scary one for me with someone that I already loved. It was a sleepover,
classic.
We watched a lot. I have a couple of friends that I specifically watched this with.
Nice.
A lot. Yeah, I'm excited. This is a vibe for sure.
Okay.
Awesome.
So you'll have to tune in next week to know what movie we're
talking
about.
Find out what we're going to be talking about. Thanks so much for kicking it with us today.
I
think we had the most fun today. I had so much fun.
I am Exhausted, but also charged.
I am jacked up.
Yeah,
exactly.
Fully torqued. I am so excited.
Amazing.
Oh, I wish we could just hang out after this.
Should we?
Should we just
let's cancel our plans and just hang out all day.
And then we'll clean our houses, respectively.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening. You can follow us on Instagram at New Friends Cinema. We now have a Facebook page, New Friends Cinema. You can follow there. I post the YouTube links on our Facebook page. So that's another way that you can get access to our content. Listen on Spotify, listen on
whatever platform your Apple, heart desires.
Yeah, all the places we're there, lurking around, hanging out.
Hell yeah.
Like, subscribe, leave a review, leave a comment. You can email us at newfriendscinema@gmail.com if you want to say hi or do a request or whatever.
Whatever.
Anything else?
Yeah, tune in next week. We're coming close. Not totally close to the end of our season.
We're closing
we're wrapping up soon.
On season one, for
and
sure.
And I think after this, we get one more pick each, which is quite exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Amazing. Okay. Well, have a great day, y'all, and we will catch you next time.
I always forget that you don't blow.
Yeah.
I always try to blow.
Don't
first.
Blow. Go on.
I was just thinking about what you just said. It's
full pen.
The dinosaur. Yeah, just the dinosaurs aren't just scissoring. It's just the image in my head.
Do dinosaurs have sex?
Yes.
Do birds have sex?
Yes.
Oh, I thought. Okay. Well, you know how fish, they don't have sex. Fish don't have sex, right?
Well, yeah.
They kind of like spray they lay the egg and then they pee on the eggs, right? Basically.
Sperminate.
I think I thought that birds did that too. Like if you lay it, if you have eggs, you just like won't. No, but of course not.
No, that's okay. Took you a second.
Yeah, because chickens. Yeah, it's all right. They have sex?
Definitely.
Whoa.
Whoa. Don't think. Oh.
Okay. Cool.
Cool. Cool. Cool.
Nobody knows it. Nobody knows. Oh, when I was down, I was your clown. Oh, I gave my heart. Boom, 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 boom.
Oh, that's. We're gonna have to practice with this.